It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it in the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. I got to tell you, folks, I am happy WIOO, WEEO, Carlisle Shippensburg took this opportunity to bring a progressive political talk show to the airs of central Pennsylvania. You are going to hear some things that you've never heard before. The last 5 years of doing this program, we have educated our listeners to some of the stuff that's been out in the mainstream media. What you need to understand about this program is we cater to the people who go to work, punch the clock, pay their bills, do the hard work in this country to make the very, very wealthy very, very wealthy. I have been a career freight industry employee. Truck driver, I've worked docks, I've worked security, I've had every crappy job you can imagine, I've had it. So I understand what it takes to be a hard-working person in this country, I understand the struggles, because I feel them too. I am not a $50 million defender of corporate America, like you get with Rush Limbaugh, or a $32 million evangelist like you get with Glenn Beck. What I talk about are policies and issues that affect people at their kitchen tables. Not bizarre, abstract ideas of who knows what you get over on the extreme right wing of the radio dial. But right here, we talk about what matters to people who go to work every day and who bust their behinds. And what we talk about is how we get people who are unemployed and need a helping hand, that helping hand that they need to become productive, hardworking people like the rest of us. And throughout the next several months, we're gonna forge this relationship, and we're gonna discuss things, and sometimes things are gonna get heated. But we're gonna have that discussion. We're gonna talk about issues, we're gonna talk about policy, we're gonna have guests, we're gonna talk to politicians, we're gonna talk to authors, we are going to run the gamut. And again, my name is Rick Smith. This is my program. To my left, good friend Jake Long, a 42-year chocolate worker, a guy who got up every day and made chocolate, one of my wife's favorite people on the planet.
Thank you, Rick. If I can amplify what you're saying, we're going to attempt in the coming days to give a different perspective that you really don't hear on the radio. The working class, the middle class's voice is pretty much not heard or silenced all too often. We're going to talk about issues of national concern and sometimes international concern, concerns which affect our state, and hopefully they'll be interesting, and we can get some interesting dialogue, and we would encourage our listeners not only to listen every night, but to call in and participate.
All right. And look, this program started 5 years ago out of some real frustration. And I'll tell the story again because I think it's important to understand where my my perspective in this program is. I met a gentleman when I first moved to the Carlisle area who, a super nice guy, to be honest. We moved our house into January. He came by with a snowblower and helped us, blew the driveway out, and just was a nice guy, a good neighbor. He invited me into his home. We went through this tour of his home where he explained to me that he had a 30-year Teamster pension that he was collecting. He was collecting Social Security. He was getting Medicare. He was very happy with. His wife was collecting Social Security disability because of a repetitive use injury at work. He bought his house with a VA loan and went on and on and on about how all these New Deal type programs helped his life, only he didn't understand they were New Deal type programs because on the bumper sticker of his car was "Tick off the liberal." Over his mantle was a picture of George W. Bush. And that moment, I realized that too many working class people have been identifying with the wrong folks. We've been identifying with the people who have been sending our jobs overseas, who have been responsible for stagnant wages, who have been responsible for an economy that does not work for you or me. And you look at this debate that's going on right now over the Bush tax cuts. Over the top 2%. All of this is being held up because we insist on the far right to giving massive tax handouts to those who don't need it at a time when the country is wallowing in debt. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So that's why we started this program, to add some balance to the corporate-controlled for-profit media. And again, I give WIOO, WEEO all the credit in the world for having the courage, really the courage to stand up and say, you know what? We are going to present our listeners with an alternative. And in the process, we want our listeners to support us. And I'm telling you right now, you need to support WIOO and WEEO for this move, because this took some courage, Jake. And this time, in this political time, to put somebody on who's going to tell you that what the Republicans want to take us back to is not going to help us. Making a giant U-turn on the superhighway of life is not a great idea. Going back to the Bush era, going back to Reaganomics, that is not going to help average, everyday working people. It's going to make things worse. And as we move forward and we have this discussion, we're talking about how we create an economy that does work for us, an economy that does promote a growing, burgeoning middle class. How do we recreate the fabulous 50s that Republicans love to pine over but have done everything in their power to destroy? And that's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to talk about what's in the news. We're going to be talking about things that we find important. And again, you know, as I said earlier, I've worked almost every day of my life. And nothing has been easy. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. We were the ground where they put the socioeconomic ladder on top of. And I often like to say I grew up in an all-black neighborhood. We played this neat little game called Chase the White Kid and Beat the Snot Out of Him. And I'm sure it was a fun game, but I was the only white kid. But what I learned early, folks, it's not about black or white. It's about green. It's about poverty. And I think once we get past our prejudice and our hatred, we can be a much better country. And I absolutely believe that, Jake. I think that if we could come together, and this is one of the things that I'm really trying, as we move forward, you're gonna hear me say things that aren't very good about the Tea Party. Because to be honest, I think they are the basically the useful idiot doofus base of the Republican Party. I honestly believe that they do not understand what they are advocating will make our country worse. But I'm willing to have that discussion. I'm willing to have that conversation. And I will not screen my calls. You will, you know, you call any of the other talk show hosts, you may not get on. I guarantee you, you call this program, you get on. It's that simple. And if you disagree with me, you move to the front of the line. Because I want to have that conversation. I want to reach out to people, Jake, because I think that's the only way we begin to change things, is by dealing with the big issues, dealing with the things that separate us. Because I do believe there is more that brings us together than tears us apart. And the political parties on both sides are masters at wedging us apart. The wealth class in this country has done a masterful job of slicing and dicing and dividing us. Your union or non-union, your skilled labor, your non-skilled labor, your white collar, your blue collar, your white, your black, your whatever. But they've done a nice job of keeping us apart. And what I'm saying is, as one nation, we need to come together, we the people, and decide on what kind of an economy we want. And forget about the ridiculous issues. If you don't want to have an abortion, don't have an abortion. If you don't want to marry a gay guy or a gay woman, don't do it. Mind your business. As my grandfather always said, don't worry about me, worry about yourself. And I am a firm believer in that.
There's that libertarian in you.
Well, again, you know, there are things that should be taken care of by our government. I think health care is one of them. And we can have this debate about health care. But there are some things that our government doesn't belong in.
That's what's exciting about a show like this, Rick. We tend to put people in nice little closets, say this is exactly what you are. But when you get into some of these issues, you realize that there's a lot of gray areas, there's a lot of black and white, and those are the kind of things we'd like to get into. If I could just like to say this, you talked about the Tea Party. I've been with them at rallies, some of the most famous healthcare rallies in the country I was at, standing right aside of them, and I was out in the street with them. And I have to say this for them, to their credit, they are angry and they are upset, as we all are.
I'm angry and upset.
The problem is, and we've said this before, their blame is going to the wrong people and their solutions are going backwards. We are going back to the future, which didn't work then and it won't work now.
I've been angry for 5 years, Jake. I've been doing this program 5 years now. I've been angry those entire 5 years. I've been screaming about massive deficits. But most importantly, what I've been screaming about are trade deficits. Because our budget deficits aren't nearly as important as our trade deficits. That's the real killer here, folks. If we could do something about the trade imbalance, if we could keep manufacturing in this country, and we can, through smart policy, we could turn that budget deficit around with no problem. It's the trade deficit. It's the fact that we go to places like Walmart and Target and buy Chinese-made products. That's the problem. You know, what I love to do whenever I see people wearing American flag shirts or anything with, you know, I love the USA or any of that stuff on it, I like to ask them, do you know that where that was made? And 99 out of 100 times, because I've only found one guy who actually knew his shirt was made in Guatemala, have the people known. And the majority of the time, their stuff's made overseas, either in Honduras or Guatemala or China or Sri Lanka. In fact, go to your closet right now while we take a break and check your American flag. Check your jingoistic shirts. Check your I Love America t-shirt. Find out where it's made. Chances are it was probably made in Mexico or who knows where. That'd be an interesting thing to do during the break. And when we come back, we're gonna take your calls, 717-231-2870, and talk about today's big primary day around the East Coast, because I think there's some really exciting races. So we're gonna take a quick break right here. Again, 717-231-2870. We are right back after this. Stick around.
Working man like me. I ain't never been on welfare. That's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern. Sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. On Wednesday, workers and activists coast to coast will turn out for the Jobs with Justice Jobs Emergency Day of Action. Sarita Gupta is Executive Director of Jobs with Justice.
What we're trying to do on that day is to send a very clear message that our communities are facing serious jobs crisis, and we really need Congress now to step up and take some bold action to address the jobs crisis.
At least 15 million Americans are jobless, with millions more underemployed. The private sector is failing to create the jobs needed to put us back to work. Gupta says the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act worked to save jobs, but it wasn't enough to get us out of the huge economic hole we're in. She says there will be actions in 60 U.S. cities Wednesday demanding government action to create jobs, and she says it will help build the National Progressive One Nation March, October 2nd in Washington, D.C., expected to draw masses of people from across America to demand the change that America voted for in 2008.
Unions, civil rights organizations, community groups, faith-based organizations, immigrant rights organizations, just numbers of different groups coming together to send a very clear message that we're one nation, you know, marching together for our values and principles. And the actions this week will help set up and get people motivated and mobilized for the October 2nd mobilization.
As low-wage workers continue to struggle in today's economy, a new book exposes a small group of managers that are playing the role of modern-day Robin Hoods. Jesse Russell reports.
While researching a book about the difficulties of low-income workers, Brandeis University sociologist Lisa Dodson stumbled into the world that exists between low-income and middle-class workers. Dodson found managers who were concerned about the wages being paid to workers they oversaw, but felt there was little they could do. Among this group, she found a number of modern-day Robin Hoods.
It was a smaller group, but they not only thought it was unfair, they also, when they could, they would do something about it. They would engage in what I call acts of economic disobedience.
Dodson said the most common reason for these managers opening their eyes to the plight of lower-wage workers had to do with children.
These were people who had close proximity with working-class people. They had close every day. They worked alongside them. And they took the moment to kind of look them in the face and say, how would I feel if I were working that hard and I couldn't take care of my kids?
The results of her investigations can be found in her new book, The Moral Underground: How Ordinary Americans Subvert an Unfair Economy.
Teamster drivers who deliver Philadelphia's two daily newspapers rejected a contract offer that replaces their defined pensions with 401ks. The newspapers are being bought out in a bankruptcy. The new owners want to renege on the pensions promise. This newscast made possible in part by the National Education Association. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, those were great places. Steel in Pittsburgh, cars in Detroit, glass in Toledo, Ohio. And what's interesting to me is the Museum of Art in Toledo recently erected a $30 million glass pavilion. And this is one of those things, I got to be honest with you, that just frustrates me to no end. This glass pavilion, this monument to America's great productive capacity, the ability to create glass, Jake, the ability to produce something in this country, a monument to that great era, to that great productive capacity, was erected with 360 glass panels weighing over 1,300 pounds apiece. And that glass was made in China. I mean, stop and think about what that actually says about us as a nation. You think about the glass that's going into World Trade Center 1 that they're building. The glass made in China. At some point, I got to ask the question, why? I got to say, you know, we need jobs here in the U.S. We need to be able to produce here at home. Shouldn't we be looking at maybe, well, I don't know, producing our own glass, Jake?
One would think. Anyway, we're waiting. We're watching the final numbers of primary day in several states. And the Tea Twizzlers who understand, look, they're a very small number. But they are out in the streets and they're active. And I got to tell you, I'm excited about this November. I think there are some really great races going to come up this November. If you want to talk about it, 717-231-2871. We can only take one call at a time. Our phone system's having a little trouble here. So we can only take one at a time. So if you don't get through, please hang up and call back. Again, 717-231-2870. The race in Delaware has been called, and Mike Castle has lost.
Wow.
Christine O'Donnell, the crazy conservative woman who lost pretty much everything she's done in statewide races, she has won. And you can thank the Tea Party Express for their corporate money. Lots of big corporate donations. The endorsement of Sarah Palin. Jim DeMint, the senator from South Carolina, he also endorsed them as well as the NRA. She prevailed. And I got to be honest with you. I'm excited about this because, one, it's going to give the Democrat an actual shot because Castle was really a popular guy. The reality is there was just a very, very low turnout, as these midterm elections often are. And here's the thing. This is going to make for a great general election because if she wins, stop and think about this for a minute. If she wins, maybe we get that crazy woman in Nevada, that Sharon Angle. Maybe she wins. The guy from Miller from Alaska is going to win. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens to the Republican Party as they eat themselves from within. Because I think that's what's going to happen. You're not going to get McConnell and the mainstream Republicans to take them in.
Well, the Republican Senatorial Committee was afraid of what could happen, which exactly happened tonight. Their perception, I think it's right, they were saying, look, Castle stands a much better chance. If he gets defeated, the Democrat, of course, as you just stated, has a much better chance of winning. If that happens, then the Democrats save the day in Delaware. The Republicans' chances of taking over the Senate are basically out the door. You can forget it for this round.
Well, I'm interested to see what happens because I think it's going to be interesting because this was supposed to be a Republican seat in Delaware. This was supposed to be another one towards that majority. And I got to tell you, I don't know that in the general you're going to get that many people to come out in favor of this woman who really, honestly and truthfully, is on the fringe. I don't know if you saw some of the stuff that's been going on up to this to today. But she reported only $5,800 in income to the IRS last year. And when she was asked about it, she got all defensive, Jake. And she had basically attacked the messenger, which is the grand obstructionist party's M.O. That's the GOP M.O. To kind of do my bling bling thing like Richard Steele. That's the GOP M.O. But, the thing is she made $5,800. And I think, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I think it's a valid question of, you're a small business owner. How did you only make $5,800? How is it that you only did that? And she won't answer. She completely deflected. As David Morgan reported for Political Hot Sheet over at CBS, he writes, a Tea Party-backed candidate in today's Delaware Republican primary for Senate said today that ads attacking her personal financial history are an insult to the voters and said recent polls show her running strong against the candidate backed by the GOP leaders, suggested voters were fighting back. No, I don't know about that. I think that not enough people showed up at the polls, and she was able to rally the base. And good for her. Hey, good for her.
Delaware tends to be a moderate state, Rick. Even the Republicans that win down there tend to be moderate, as in a good majority, a good percentage of the elections, it comes down to where does the middle vote. This could be a situation where the moderates in the Republican Party are so turned off, they'll either stay home or vote Democratic.
Hulig News notes, after Delaware GOP congressional candidate Christine O'Donnell was accused of not paying her college debts and illegal campaign fundraising, she retorted on CBS Early Show with, I'm an average hardworking American. I'm not a multimillionaire like my opponent. Deflecting, I think. But the reality is, look, it's a valid question. I think the Delaware voters are going to have to get, and they're going to get. I mean, this is going to heat up. These are not going away. There are claims that O'Donnell did not receive her college degree for 12 years because she owed the school money. And there are even more questions of unpaid campaign debts from her previous unsuccessful runs for office. And I mean, for her, if I were her, this would be a great campaign issue, Jake. 12 years to get her diploma because she couldn't pay her tuition. Even when she earned the degree. I mean, that sounds like an issue to me, but, you know, con jobs like her, they would never say that in public, that we've made education too difficult for people to attain. Another complaint was lodged with the Federal Elections Commission against O'Donnell. I guess her campaign organization and the Tea Party Express, there's an allegation of illegal fundraising. And, again, with the limited campaign finance rules we have, it scares me when I hear somebody involved in illegal fundraising, because there are almost no rules thanks to Citizen United.
I think you're exactly right on that. If I can go back to your other point, I mean, if she's running with the support of the Tea Party, what's their big thing? Well, you know, the government has to be more responsible with the taxpayers' money. Well, you know, if you want to be one of them in Washington telling us how we can do that, don't you think you ought to start in your own personal life, maybe, just maybe, and be able to come to the voters and say, see, I was responsible. I understand what it is to be fiscally responsible and pay my bills and be a responsible citizen. What you're telling me, it sounds like there's some question as to whether she can truthfully make that claim.
717-231-2870 if you want to weigh in on this. What do you think? Do you think the Tea Party won this or was a low turnout? Personally, I'm saying this is a very low turnout. The numbers that I'm seeing right now are not official, but a very low turnout. And she was able to do what the Tea Party has been able to do, and that's to mobilize their base. Whether that's going to work in the general election, I don't know. So we'll find out. Also, from her financial disclosure, again, like I said, she made $5,800 from March of 2009, or she claimed she made $5,800 from March of 2009 to June of 2010. Again, there are also ads out there attacking O'Donnell, saying that she's received a tax lien from the IRS. So, you know, when CBS asked her, hey, how can we trust you in the office that you're seeking with all the problems that you seem to have? She said, you know, again, the key, unanswered financial troubles. This is what conservatives have been getting away with for years. They don't have to answer the questions. And she deflected it. And you got to give her credit. You got to give these, you know, Sarah Palin, you got to give George Bush, they never answer the questions. I go back to the debate Palin had with Joe Biden when they asked her a question. Well, I'm not going to answer your question. I'm going to say what I want to say. I love that.
Didn't matter what they – you're exactly right. It was funny at the time. No matter what they asked her, she was going to say what she wanted to say.
Yep. It's like this Sharon Angle out in Nevada, which I got is another great example. First, she, you know, was complaining that Harry Reid wasn't going to debate her. And she said, I want a debate. And then all of a sudden, well, I don't like the date. I don't want a debate. Oh, let's set a date here. Oh, wait, no debate. And then it was, oh, we want an informed electorate, but no debate. Because I think she has to realize, look, the more people know about her, the scarier that she's seeing.
Well, if you remember a couple of weeks ago, Rick, I mean, she was making these ridiculous statements, and the press was just hammering her.
So she calls
a press conference, shows up, and decides that she's not going to answer any questions because her handlers were saying, basically, shut up for the moment. We have to educate you.
What I loved.
And she walks away.
What I loved is, you know, she went on to Fox and said, hey, you know, I want to be able to say what I want to say, and I want to use this as a campaign finance forum. And even Fox News is going, hey, wait a minute. come on. What did she say that time? Tell me the questions before I get here and maybe I'll answer them, or something along that line. Something just really way out on the deep end. Anyway, we're going to take another quick break right here. 717-231-2870 is the number. You got something on your mind. You want to talk politics, we're right here. Stick around. We're right back after this.
Don't let us get sick. Don't let us get old. Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Whether you want it to or not, technology marches on and on and on and on. For example, Kenmore, the home appliance maker, offers a select line of washers and dryers that talk. Not to us owners. No, no, we're too stupid. Rather, the machines talk directly to service agents back at Kenmore Central, wherever in the spinning cosmos that might be located. Just dial up a service repair number and a faraway corporate facilitator will listen to your machine, explain its problems, then make a diagnosis to get the appliance back in sync. Am I alone in being suspicious about this? How long before the machines do their own dialing, perhaps even calling other washer dryers in your area to form insurgent pods? Seriously, do you really know what capabilities the corporate powers have quietly tucked into your home appliances? You can try reading your owner's manual, but those things are too dense to decipher, unless you're a computer. For all you know, your laundry room, which appears so pedantic and one-dimensional, could be listening to you, secretly recording and reporting your daily patterns, thought processes, and comings and goings. And don't think for a moment that the washer-dryer combos are in this by themselves. Co-conspirators abound. Your self-starting coffee maker, your smart refrigerator, that iPod in your ear, and your do-it-all cell phone. Oh my God, they're not called cell phones for nothing, are they? This is Jim Hightower saying, admit it. We the people really know nothing about the techno-gizmos that outnumber us and completely surround us. What did they choose to rise up en masse? They could bring our whole civilization down in a nanosecond. I'm surprised that the right-wing blogosphere hasn't already sounded the alarms about this as a liberal plot masterminded by Obama and his cadre of Islamic techno-communist fascists.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
I got 800 miles of open board right outside my door. There's Minutemen in little pickup trucks who declared their own dang war. Now the government wants to build a barrier like old Berlin, 8 feet tall. But if Uncle Sam sends me illegals home, who's gonna build the wall? Who's gonna build your wall, boy? Who's gonna mow your lawn? Who's gonna cook your Mexican food when your Mexican maid is gone? Who's gonna wax the floors tonight down at the local mall? Who's gonna wash your baby's face? Who's gonna build?
We haven't wanted to do for the wages that are being offered. And I say what we do is we go and we raise those wages to a living wage. It just makes perfect sense to me. I don't know if you saw it, Jake, but the president delivered his second back-to-school pep talk to school kids today. And while there wasn't the same fervor we saw last year, it was still met with pretty sizable resistance. The speech was delivered from the Julia R. Masterman Laboratory and Demonstration School in Philadelphia with the intent to encourage students to make the most of their educational opportunities. The president said, quote, "Nobody gets to write your destiny but you. Your future is in your hands. Your life is what you make of it. And nothing, absolutely nothing, is beyond your reach." so long as you're willing to dream big, so long as you're willing to work hard, so long as you're willing to stay focused on your education. One would think this would be the kind of message that the GOP would want to encourage. This is the stuff that the cons would want to encourage. But it's coming from him. It's coming from the black guy. Sure. So we must oppose it.
I saw a clip of his speech. I mean, and I got to tell you, this whole issue upsets me. I heard him say when he came on the podium, he said, hey, listen, you guys. He was talking like a father to the students. He said, listen, you guys, you need to come to class every day. You need to study hard. You need to do all the things that your parents want you to do. You need to stay out of trouble. He talked like a parent. He talked like a concerned parent. I understand there was one school district down in Texas, down near Austin, where you literally had to send permission to the school to have his speech listened to by your students. There was another school district in South Carolina where the school administrator said he's too controversial.
Too controversial.
I don't understand that.
Too controversial. Let's read some more of what the president was too controversial about. Obama points out the obvious, which is education, quote, never has been more important. I'm sure there will be times in the months ahead when you're staying up late, cramming for a test, or dragging yourself out of bed on a rainy morning and wondering if all of it's worth it. Let me tell you, the president said, there is no question about it. Nothing will have as great an impact on your success in life as your education. But this kind of hard work talk, this kind of be accountable message, I got to tell you, I think the conservatives should be all over. But again, it's him. So the party must oppose. They must obstruct. Obama went on to say, more and more the kinds of opportunities that are open to you will be determined by how far you go in school. And, you know, honestly and truthfully, that's true. And I read a report today, Jake, that more women, more females are graduating from college. More females are graduating from postgraduate schools. And this year, for the first time in history, more women have earned doctoral degrees. And, I look out onto the streets, and what I'm seeing is a bunch of blue-collar, working-class men who didn't take advantage of that opportunity. And what worries me is that we're seeing the gender divide, where women are the ones who are going to be in the hard, in the high-skilled, high-labor pool markets, while we, the male, who we swing hammer. That's what worries me.
Well, some of that... The fact that children are raised in one-parent families and perhaps they don't have that strong, dominant male, especially when it comes to boys, is that a possible reason?
No. But what he wanted to do is, like you said, Jake, he wanted kids to be responsible, show up for school on time, pay attention in class, do your homework, study for tests, stay out of trouble. You know, really radical stuff. You know, that really radical stuff. And, you know, I read the speech and I watched some of it, and the only real political stuff the right wing can even remotely whine about is that the president said this. He said, quote, what I want all of you to take from my speech is that life is precious, and part of its beauty lies in its diversity. We shouldn't be embarrassed by the things that make us different. We should be proud of them, because it's the things that make us different that make us who we are. And the strength and character of this country has always come from our ability to recognize ourselves in one another, no matter who we are or where we come from, what we look like, or what abilities or disabilities we have. To me, Jake, you know, I read that, and it's inspiring to me that this country is the great melting pot. We have the ability to have people from all over the world come together. The best minds, the best workers, we have that ability.
What I don't understand is not just lack of respect for Obama, lack of respect for the office. It used to be considered an honor to be to be not only in the presence of the president, but to be the recipient of a speech directed at you. And how far have we come out of because of our ideological wars, and that's exactly what's happened in this country, because that wide gulf. I mean, how does that help the country? It does nothing but hurt when we demean the office of the President of the United States. Why? Because, oh, we don't like the fact that maybe he's a Democrat, or in this instance, maybe we don't like what his policies are. He's still the President of the United States.
Well, I mean, the most radical thing he said, and I wanted to save that for last, because the most radical thing he said, and he finished the speech with, "Thank you, God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America." By far the most radical thing he said. Because as every angry, radical right-winger will tell you, that's blasphemy because they know he's the devil. Either that or he's a Muslim.
Well, I don't know why they fear this guy. I mean, he has said he has stepped up to the plate, and I know they like to inject racism. He has stepped up to the plate and said to the black community, look, you have to step up. You have to step up. You know, we got to get away from this looking down on students who embrace education. That's a positive. You know, we have to change some of our mores in our black community because it's not working.
Well, more importantly, what he said, and I heard the speech, as he said, look, moms, you got to make your kids go to school. You know, he was speaking to a room full of African-American mothers, and he said, look, I know the men in your community have left you. But you've got to raise this generation. And he said, we're going to help you, but you've got to be the one pushing. And look, where I grew up, in a single-parent household. My mother pushed me every single day because she said, look, you know, you got to work your way through. And there's an opportunity here, but you got to have an education. You got to be able to do simple math. You know, I read a report the other day that said the three most wanted skills by employers were showing up, listening, and doing simple math. Are those really skills? You got to wonder. And you look at this thing in Harrisburg, this story that was in the Patriot today. Charles Thompson wrote, faced with $6.8 million gap, Harrisburg School District Chief Operating Officer Sean Fair proposed a series of dramatic cuts in programs, including the elimination of all kindergarten and pre-K classes next year and eliminating all district sports teams at the end of the fall. Look, if this is how bad things have come in the state of education in this country, that we're going to cut kindergarten and pre-K programs that give children a head start, that give children the basics. Because we know the sooner we get them into school, the sooner we get them acclimated to learning, the better they're going to be. If we're talking about cutting this, we got some serious problems. And as far as cutting all sports programs, to me, that is another stupid idea. Because for a lot of kids, that's the anchor that keeps them in school. And we should be encouraging that. Me, personally, I think what we should be doing is we should be making school year-round. We should be making school days longer. We should be doing more experiential learning. We should be training our kids not only for the jobs of the 21st century, but also to be critical thinkers. So we don't have a bunch of nitwits running around with signs going, smaller government, less spending, smaller government, less spending, when they're collecting unemployment. Or running around with signs saying, get your government off my Medicare. I want people smarter than that. And our education system has failed us. And I want to know what you think. Pick up the phone. Give us a call. 717-231-2870. Is this outraging to you? I mean, it infuriates me. It infuriates me that we have an education system that is willing to lap off the youngest at the knees. No pre-K, no kindergarten programs. Are you freaking kidding me? And this isn't a liberal conservative issue. This isn't right, left. This is common sense, folks. This is right down the middle. This is if we don't have an educated populace, if we don't have people who can read and write and think critically, we are doomed as a nation. We are doomed. If we can't get people who are smart enough to take care of the next generation, Think about this, baby boomers. You're going to need somebody to wipe your behind. You're going to need somebody to wipe your nose. If we can't find people who are smart enough to find which side of the Kleenex to use, you're in big trouble.
Well, I think there's some issues here in Harrisburg that make it a little bit different, There's a lot of school. You want to pick it up?
Let's pick this up on the other side of the break. 717-231-2870 is the number. Pick up the phone. Give us a call. What are your thoughts on this? What do we do to help school funding? Or do we just slash and burn? Or go back to the old one-room schoolhouse? I'm curious your thoughts. We're right back after this. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
On July 5, 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law. It is also known as the Wagner Act after its chief sponsor, New York Senator Robert Wagner. Prior to its passage, Senator Wagner chaired the National Labor Board, created by Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 to attempt to bring order to labor-management relations. The National Labor Board consisted of three representatives from labor and three from industry, with Wagner as the chairman. It was here that Senator Wagner realized government assistance was required to level the playing field if labor unions were to effectively bargain with management. President Roosevelt said of the National Labor Relations Act, "It should serve as an important step toward the achievement of just and peaceful labor relations in industry." Hailed as the Magna Carta of labor, once the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law, workers were encouraged and protected to exercise their newly recognized rights to freedom of association, self-organization, and engage in concerted activities for the purpose of collectively bargaining through a representative of their own choosing in order to establish wages, hours, and conditions. Employer interference, such as threats and intimidation, firing, refusing to negotiate with the union, and discrimination for union activity were expressly prohibited. These illegal activities are described as unfair labor practices by the law. The impact of the Wagner Act on American life was substantial. The standard of living for American workers, their families, and communities was extraordinary. Unionization rates increased to a high of 35% of the American workforce as American workers demanded their rights. Working men and women finally had a unified voice to stand up and fight for dignity, respect, and safety in their workplace. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
If you don't put religion, sex, and TV, think you're so clever, classless, and free.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
But you're still f***ing peasants as far as I can see. Working class hero is something to be.
That's one of the frames that we're starting to see more of. The Republicans have seen that the working class angle is something that they need to fight back, because people who have been working all their lives, who have never had to ask their government for help, who have never had to collect unemployment, who have never had to have the indignity of collecting food stamps or any other government program, they never needed that helping hand in the past. Right now, they're beginning to say, I need the help. The jobs aren't there. There's really something going on here. And it is, as Warren Buffett said, it is class warfare, and his class is winning. I would say they've won, but he's saying they're winning. Our quote of the day comes from House Republican leader John Boehner. Banger. He says, quote, "Instead of resorting to tired old class warfare rhetoric, pitting one working American against another, the president and the Democratic leadership should start working with us, this week to ensure a fair and open debate to pass legislation to cut spending and freeze taxes without any further delay. That's their plan, man. That's their plan. That's all they've got. That's all the party of no ideas, no vision, nothing. That's all they've got. Tax cuts, deregulation, and spending freezes. Well, I'm telling you, folks, spending freezes means goodbye to your unemployment, goodbye to any help for you at the bottom, goodbye for help for us. Goodbye. Tax cuts means the rich people get richer and the poor people get poorer. That's what that means. Deregulation means business, do whatever you want. And we see what a great job they've done these last 8 years. What a wonderful job they've done policing themselves. And I look to this thing in Harrisburg as another example of our tax code failing our inner cities, our tax codes failing to invest in this nation and in our future. The fact that we're talking about going, hey, we don't need pre-K. We don't need kindergarten. We don't need any of that stuff. Oh, the heck with those kids. 717-231-2870. 717-231-2870 is the number here. What are your thoughts on this? Do we cut this? This guy, Stephen Farr, or Sean Farr.
Sean Farr.
His ideas, eliminating kindergarten and pre-K for 3- and 4-year-olds, and current full-day kindergarten would be scaled back to half-day. So we're going to cut them off there. Along with pre-K, it would be dropped altogether after the 2011-12 school year. No sports. Farr's proposal suggested ending all district-sponsored sports at the end of the current fall. No sports would return, would run in the 2011-2012 time frame. He wants private managers, examining the hiring of private managers for up to 3 elementary schools next year. A move, Farr said, could simultaneously cut costs and improve student achievement. They're talking about layoffs. So, again, what's frustrating to me about this is we're talking about cut at what we need, at the source that we need.
Well,
so it's amazing stuff.
Harrisburg is obviously not only affected by the economic downturn. There was a situation where because of the new mayor, her handpicked Board of Controls ousted Superintendent Gerald Cohn. In the process, what that created was a situation where there were administrators coming in, coming out. It was basically a musical chair. And they had anticipated getting about $7.1 million, Rick, out of federal funds, federal school improvement grants. And because of the turmoil in the school system, they just failed. And consequently, they're short about $6.8 million. But I can tell you this, James Farr proposal of eliminating sports totally, it's just not gonna fly in Harrisburg. Harrisburg has some great sports programs. The truth is that because of the economic conditions in Harrisburg, a good many of the athletes in Harrisburg High, their way of getting to college is through sports. I don't think that's gonna fly.
Okay. So there's nothing going on? It's crashed.
Run, Bob. No, we're good.
No, we're crashed.
No, we're not. We're fine.
Well, he's telling me we're crashed.
Who is?
Mike.
Oh.
Yeah. Well.
Should I disconnect and reconnect?
Well, I guess we're going to take a quick break right here. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News, I'm Doug Cunningham. On Wednesday, workers and activists coast to coast will turn out for the Jobs with Justice Jobs Emergency Day of Action.
Sarita Gupta is Executive Director of Jobs with Justice.
What we're trying to do on that day is to send a very clear message that our communities are facing serious jobs crisis, and we really need Congress now to step up and take some bold action to address the jobs crisis.
At least 15 million Americans are jobless, with millions more underemployed. The private sector is failing to create the jobs needed to put us back to work. Gupta says the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act worked to save jobs, but it wasn't enough to get us out of the huge economic hole we're in. She says there will be actions in 60 U.S. cities Wednesday demanding government action to create jobs, and she says it will help build the National Progressive One Nation March, October 2nd in Washington, D.C., expected to draw masses of people from across America to demand the change that America voted for in 2008.
Unions, civil rights organizations, community groups, faith-based organizations, immigrant rights organizations, just numbers of different groups coming together to send a very clear message that we're one nation, you know, marching together for our values and principles. And the actions this week will help set up and get people motivated and mobilized for the October 2nd mobilization.
As low-wage workers continue to struggle in today's economy, a new book exposes a small group of managers that are playing the role of modern-day Robin Hoods. Jesse Russell reports.
While researching a book about the difficulties of low-income workers, Brandeis University sociologist Lisa Dodson stumbled into the world that exists between low-income and middle-class workers. Dodson found managers who were concerned about the wages being paid to workers they oversaw, but felt there was little they could do. Among this group, she found a number of modern-day Robin Hoods.
It was a smaller group, but they not only thought it was unfair, they also, when they could, they would do something about it. They would engage in what I call acts of economic disobedience.
Dodson said the most common reason for these managers opening their eyes to the plight of lower-wage workers had to do with children.
These were people who had close proximity with working-class people. They have close every day. They work alongside them. And they took the moment to kind of look them in the face and say, how would I feel if I were working that hard and I couldn't take care of my kids?
The results of her investigations can be found in her new book, The Moral Underground: How Ordinary Americans Subvert an Unfair Economy.
Teamster drivers who deliver Philadelphia's two daily newspapers rejected a contract offer that replaces their defined pensions with 401ks. The newspapers are being bought out in a bankruptcy. The new owners want to renege on the pensions promise. This newscast made possible in part by the National Education Association. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
And now, back to the Rick Smith Show.
That's the sad thing, waiting for the hammer to fall. And look, there's so many things that can bring us together. Some of my closest friends are people who politically I'm not on the same page with, so to speak. But the reality is there, and truly, there are many things that bring us together. And that's why we're doing this. That's why this program is here. Tonight we are having a few little glitches. We're working that out. Our phone number again, 717-231-2871. We will have an 800 number tomorrow. A little fighting with the phone company to get that all put into place. But 717-231-2870. And if you want to reach me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I want to thank our horn listeners for tuning in tonight. Props to you. And for all the people here at WIOO and WEEO, really, this is going to be a great couple of months as we go into this election season, because I think it's important that we have these conversations and we begin to talk about how to solve these problems. Because some of the things that I think as Americans, we've lost that vision of how we can do great things. I think we've lost a little bit that can-do spirit and how we tackle big problems. And I think we can do this again. And it's important that we do pretty simple stuff to talk about. It's going to be a lot harder to actually do. And what's bothered me with our political system is that we seem to be at each other's throats all the time. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. Your call, 717-231-2870. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
Hey,
come to talk.
Hey, working man like me. I ain't never been on welfare, and that's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
I got 800 miles of open border right outside my door.
Did they hear this?
There's Minutemen and little pickup trucks who declared their own dang war. Now the government wants to build a like old Berlin, 8 feet tall. But if Uncle Sam sends me illegals home, who's gonna build the wall?
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 717-231-2870. 717-231-2870 is the number. If you tried before, couldn't get through, we're having a little glitch with our system. We'd love to have you call in and give us your thoughts, your opinions. In San Diego, nearly 100 people turned out at 5:30 a.m. for a candlelight vigil to protest Union Bank's announced plan to have a sheriff's department take the home of Luis Maria Valunias, to take her home because her youngest son had cancer, and he's been having chemotherapy, and they've been struggling to get by. And the medical bills have been mounting. And Congressman Bob Filner, who said, quote, we're going to take a stand together to change America. We have a president who's talking about hope. We have to give him strength. The banks have taken over both parties. He called for changes in the law to protect those who are victimized by predatory lending practices. And, you know, the reality is that this rally drew widespread media attention. All the news media in that area was there, and, you know, we saw it out here. What's interesting to me is here is a woman who's fighting to keep her son alive. The health care costs are killing them. He suffers from kidney disease as well as cancer. And, look, I mean, this can't be easy on the family. But we have a pay-or-die health care system. The mortgage company doesn't care that she can't pay the health care bills. The mortgage company doesn't care that she can't pay the mortgage. It's out the door. And what's interesting to me is when you start talking about the health care bill, while I'm not happy with what we got, and I'm not happy with it because we have a bunch of conservative bent-knee Democrats and the entire Republican Party who fought against common sense, I'm going to tell you right now, there is nobody in this country who should lose their home because they or their loved ones got sick. There is nobody who should go bankrupt because they or a loved one got sick. And this ridiculous notion that we need to have this pay-or-die healthcare system is dangerous to me, Jake. You know, I look at this woman and I look at this congressman, and good on him for standing up and saying, you know what, I don't care if you arrest me. You're not taking this woman's house. It's just one of those things that, and we hear these congressional candidates going, well, first thing we're going to do, we're going to repeal Obamacare. the first step forward in any major healthcare legislation in my lifetime. And it's going to help millions of people. And the people who don't like it are not the ones that are screaming the most. Because, again, government decides who gets what. And the corporations don't like it. The multinational corporations don't like it. So they're going to fund front groups like FreedomWorks and Americans for Prosperity to go out there and whip up a bunch of trouble. They're going to pay the Tea Party Express to take their $100,000 buses and drive around and whip up trouble. You know, that whole healthcare debate. You know, people, senior citizens run around, get the government out of my Medicare. Hey, Medicare is a government program. But look, folks, at the end of this, it's about all of us coming together and deciding, hey, how are we going to best take care of each other? I mean, we talk about being a Christian nation, Jake, and we do this all the time. We talk about, oh, we're this grand Christian nation. But we don't seem to care about our neighbor. I got a problem with that. I honestly do, Jake.
2 million people lost their homes, Rick. And I know this is, we've gone over this on this show probably a dozen times. 2 million people lost their homes because of the cost of health care. You're exactly right. That should never happen. And you touched on something. My God, we could do a whole show. We could do a three-hour show on the principles of Christianity and how that impacts on politics. And you're exactly right. To me, when you look at healthcare, there's so many things that we should be doing if we're truly a Christian nation. Oh, I don't know. How about preventing people from dying simply because they don't have healthcare to begin with? How about taking care of innocent children? How about taking care of people who we say are the heart and soul of this country, go to work every day, those people who for no fault of their own lose their homes.
Oh,
because
you're a
of
bleeding
healthcare.
Heart. You're a bleeding heart.
Well, I'm not
heart.
A bleeding heart. I think in the end it just makes common sense. If we're not going to argue the healthcare issue on the level of morality, which I think we should, it certainly should, not totally, but that has to be part of it. No. Then let's look at the economics of it.
Just look at the common sense.
Healthcare reform and a better system long term is better for this country in so many ways, not only quality of life, but economics, economic health of this country. Healthcare reform, the Congress itself, the Office of Budget Management, has come out with a report that said the first 10 years, this plan, and we agree, Rick, that it's at best a bottom line, and we would have wanted total health care reform, which we didn't get. But even this marginal bill, the first 10 years will save $200 billion. The second 10, in other words, in 20 years, it will have saved over $2 trillion, $200 billion. That's a lot of money. Now, when we talk about a system going from a system of going to a preventive medicine system, how can you calculate how much money that will save over and above that? We have a reactive system here. And I know we talk about this many times, but in simplest terms, we have a reactive system. What we need is a preventive system. And long term, we're going to save an awful lot of money.
I mean, a
lot of lives.
How we should be talking about this, and this is what the Democrats didn't do. This was the failure that the Democrats had. They didn't appeal like the Republicans do to the radical self-interest of every person in this country, which is, look, it's going to cost us a couple of bucks. We have to pay for it. But we're already paying for it. We're already paying twice as much as every other country in the world for health care, and we're not covering everybody.
Actually, more than twice.
And we're not getting better outcomes. We're not achieving longer life. We're not preventing infant mortality. We're not doing any of these things, but we're spending a lot of money. How do we use the money that we're spending to make sure that everyone gets health care? So you say, hey, look, you, Rick Smith, what we're talking about is we're going to talk about you're going to have health care regardless of what happens to you. From cradle to grave, you are going to have health care. Rick Smith would look at this as like, hey, that's a good deal for me. That's a good investment in me. I'm going to have a doctor who's going to follow me through my life and going to help me stay healthy. We need a system that keeps people healthy, not treats them when they're sick, keeps them healthy. And it's that kind of thing that the Democrats didn't do. And you've got to appeal to people's radical self-interest. What's in it for me? I heard this a lot during this debate. Well, what's in it for me? What am I going to get out of it? How much is it going to cost me? And the great thing about this discussion, Jake, is the fact that, look, people started to figure out how much the true cost of healthcare is, how much corporations have been paying, and all that's being shifted onto us more and more. Eventually we're going to pay the brunt of it. It's going to happen. But for right now, you've got too many people who think, well, I've got the best health care in the world until I need it, and I end up like this woman whose son is sick, and they end up taking your house. Again, I can't stress enough how obscene that is. That people who go to work every day, bust their behind, can lose everything because of one illness. I'm curious, your stories. What do you think about this? Do we repeal the health care bill? 717-231-2870.
I can tell you this. This lawsuit, I think it's 12 attorney generals are taking before the court. I think all of them except one are Democrats, or Republicans, excuse me. Tom Corbett has put his name on. You and I both know after you analyze some of the previous Supreme Court decisions, which would have an impact, their chances of winning that are very, very slim. That is not going to be repealed. It's just not. It's pretty much a political ploy, certainly on the part of our attorney general. And they're not going to win. They're simply not going to win that.
Well, I mean, look, at the end of this, what they've got people all tingling in the panties about is the fact that there's this individual mandate. And look, you have to have everybody in. You cannot have a system of free riders. And I would think that this would be something that the Republicans would be in favor of. Personal responsibility. You have to be responsible for yourself. You've got to provide yourself with insurance. Personally, I'm not in favor of the system that we're moving toward, but it's a step in the right direction. I would have preferred opening up Medicare, saying, look, this is how much Medicare is going to cost a month. We're going to affix a price to it, and everybody's going to pay that price. Simple. We've already got the infrastructure in place. We've already got the networks in place. Everything's there. It would have been a much simpler system, but what you had is you had too much pushback from the big insurance companies, which I understand. It's their radical self-interest. You had too much pushback from conservative Democrats because it's their radical self-interest. And honestly and truthfully, so much misinformation on the extreme right that you got people riled up. When I saw senior citizens going, I don't want the government in health care, my head was about to explode. You know, my grandmother, you know, the best messaging tool in the world that the president could have used was my grandmother. Said, Granny Smith, come out on here on stage with me. This is what I would have done. If Rick Smith were president, I would have marched Granny Smith out onto the stage and said, Granny, how's that Medicare working out for you? And my grandmother would have said, oh, I just love it. I just love it. Love it so much. I had my hip replaced. So good. My knee replaced. Oh, I can bend it. Had my heart ticker thingy fixed up. I'm in good shape. I'm 82 years old. Wouldn't have made it. Wouldn't have made it past 70 if she had to buy pay-or-die health care, mind you. But she's now 82 years old. Why? Because we as a society said, you know what? It's important that we take care of our elderly. It's important that they have good, quality health care.
Well, to be fair to some of the senior citizens, they were misled. They were opposed to health care reform. Why? Because they were lied to. They were told the Obamacare, as the Republicans like to
can you make
put
that
a name
sucking
on
noise
it
again?
No, I can't.
Just one more.
They're
time.
Gonna. It's gonna take away. They're gonna take away from Medicare. Well, the truth is, what they took away from Medicare was the excess profits. Under the Bush administration, he allowed up to a 14% profit margin over the cost within the Medicare system. Obama came in and said, hey, I want to reduce that to 4. Now, that's a considerable savings. It is true, yes, they're taking out of Medicare, but they're not taking out of Medicare coverage. They're taking it out of the excess profits.
Well, if they can't have excess profits, they won't. They just won't. They
but
won't
that
take care
wasn't
of it.
Told to them. So they said no. Many of them, and I ran into them, and a lot of them were union members that were retired, Rick. They said, "Oh, we don't want that," because they were basically lied to. Now you have to admit this, and here's where maybe we need to have an honest conversation with the American people. There also needs to be personal responsibility. We have to somehow persuade the American people that part of the problem in healthcare is that too many people just live unhealthy lives. They eat too much, they don't exercise. There's all kinds of things. Well, you can shake your head all you want, but personal responsibility would help. Now that's wait a minute. Now, let me say what I want to say. That is part of a comprehensive healthcare reform program that we have to institute in this country. The second part is it has to be preventive system. Third part is it has to include everybody.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about this when we get back. 717-231-2870. We're right back after this.
To the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Whether you want it to or not, technology marches on and on and on and on. For example, Kenmore, the home appliance maker, offers a select line of washers and dryers that talk. Not to us owners. No, we're too stupid. Rather, the machines talk directly to service agents back at Kenmore Central, wherever in the spinning cosmos that might be located. Just dial up a service repair number and a faraway corporate facilitator will listen to your machine, explain its problems, then make a diagnosis to get the appliance back in sync. Am I alone in being suspicious about this? How long before the machines do their own dialing, perhaps even calling other washer dryers in your area to form insurgent pods? Seriously, do you really know what capabilities the corporate powers have quietly tucked into your home appliances? You can try reading your owner's manual, but those things are too dense to decipher, unless you're a computer. For all you know, your laundry room, which appears so pedantic and one-dimensional, could be listening to you, secretly recording and reporting your daily patterns, thoughts, and don't think for a moment that the washer-dryer combos are in this by themselves. Co-conspirators abound. Your self-starting coffee maker, your smart refrigerator, that iPod in your ear, and your do-it-all cell phone. Oh my God, they're not called cell phones for nothing, are they? This is Jim Hightower saying, admit it. We the people really know nothing about the techno-gizmos that outnumber us and completely surround us. What did they choose to rise up en masse? They could bring our whole civilization down in a nanosecond. I'm surprised that the right-wing blogosphere hasn't already sounded the alarms about this as a liberal plot masterminded by Obama and his cadre of Islamic techno-communist fascists.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
The most important issues of the day in a way that only Rick can cover them. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to paradise. 717-231-2870. That's the number. In Natchez, Washington, last weekend they held their annual Sportsman Day Parade. And being the class act that you would expect from the Tea Party people, they sponsored a float. And to be honest, it was just plain dumb. But many local residents called it offensive and in bad taste. The tea float was decorated to look like a radio flyer wagon. They made this big wagon, had radio flyer on the side. It was pulled behind a truck. And the local T-Twits had their signs, you know, everything from Obamacare and healthcare takeover to wasted tax money and, you know, no pubic option, you know, that kind of stuff. What caught my eye was the fact that there was a guy with an Obama mask whipping this white guy who was pretending to pull the wagon. And two things caught my eye. First, was the pretending to do work thing. That seems to be a T-Twit special. You remember that guy in Missouri who had the big trailer-sized sign that said, "Parasite or producer, you choose." Here was a guy who collected $1 million in federal farm subsidies. And the second part of that caught my eye, Jake, was the fact that there was a guy who was willing to be whipped in public. Because the Obama character was actually whipping this guy. And I just kept thinking, brain dead. One local resident said it certainly came across as very racist to me and really bad manners. Bottom line, lack of manners, adding a lack of respect for our presidency, our government, just everything down the line. It was quite disturbing. Kirk Groening, the president of the T-Twizzler group, Remember Us, We the People, he says maybe we went a little far, a little too far. But he complained, of course, that, well, you know, people thought this was racist. Well, I don't believe that. John Miles, president of the Lions Club that put on this event, disagreed with local residents saying, well, there's a respect for the presidency. And I think Groening exceeded any good taste and with his group's presentation. I guess it's all an opinion. But you know what? He has the right to do that, I think, Jake. And you know, if he wants to make a fool out of himself and let somebody whip him in public, I'm all in favor of it. Maybe he'd even let me whip him in public. You know, I have a friend I used to work with. He used to go to New York City, take his 2 weeks vacation, go to New York City to one of those dominatrix, pay her about $1,500 for the day for her to whip him. And that was his good time. So maybe that's what we've got here. Mm-hmm. 717-231-2870. That's the number. If you've got something on your mind, Senate Democrats snag two GOP votes to clear the way for a bill aimed at creating jobs, in part by giving small businesses easier access, according to the Washington Post. By a 61-37 vote, the Senate closed debate on the aid package, which includes $30 billion for a lending fund and about $12 billion in tax relief for small businesses. The long-standing logjam over the legislation ended thanks to Ohio Republican George Voinovich, who said he would join the Democrats in helping to push for small business relief legislation through the Senate because the economy was, quote, really hurting. And amazing that he finally figured that out, that the economy is really hurting, and we need to do something to jumpstart it. He was joined by fellow Republican George Lemieux of Florida in helping to reach the 60 votes, the only two Republicans. Now, look, I don't know that I'm so thrilled about giving tax breaks to small businesses and this whole thing. What I've said we should do from the beginning, if I were president, is you create demand. And what we're seeing is the Chamber of Commerce and the small business lobby firm, the NFIBCXQZY, whatever the acronym is for them, they've come out and said, look, we don't want these mandates and we don't want this and this and this and this. We want sales. And I agree. Our government should be investing in things. We should be building roads and bridges, and we should be replacing all of the federal fleet with electric cars or more energy-efficient cars. We should be consuming something to increase the demand, Jake. Take that $30 billion and start buying stuff. Build something really freaking big. The T-Twizzlers love to say, well, we need to secure our borders. Okay, let's build a 100-foot-high fence. I'm in favor of it. Come on, let's build a fence 100 feet high. So we can put a next to our big freaking wall, we can put a big freaking hotel and a big freaking shopping mall and of course, a big freaking ladder factory that would build big ladders so you can go over and back. That's what we should be doing. At least that's my thought.
Well, you talked about Voinovich. I mean, the truth is probably one of the reasons he voted for it because he's not up for election. He's not up for election, so he doesn't have to worry about the political consequences. But still, thank God, two of the Republicans finally came to their senses. And to be fair to Voinovich, I'm not trying to poo-poo his vote totally, because he has been voting with the Democrats on some important issues. And he had, through his career, and I think you will attest to this, through his career,
he's
a Republican, he's a moderate Republican. And today, he, you know, if you give the scale of from liberal to conservative, he's probably in the Republican parlay, he's probably close to a liberal. Because he's for common sense things that help the working class.
What's interesting to me in this whole small business thing, that you had the Republicans who were united against it, yet I got to give them credit. It was kind of their idea. I mean, this is what they...
It always was.
This is what they've been talking about since the beginning. So the fact that they've been united against it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me.
How many times have you heard Tan Man, John Boehner, just pound the Democrats on that issue? We need tax stimuluses for businesses. Now the president, all of a sudden, who, by the way, you know that you saw the numbers. Comparatively, these are small numbers for tax breaks for the small business. They still oppose it. Why? Because they don't want anything passed Congress that would help the Democrats in the fall.
And that's really a sad reason to be doing this, Jake. I mean, it's really a sad reason when you have a political structure. And look, I may not agree with people on the extreme right, but some of the best political conversations I've had are with people who are diametrically opposed to me. Yeah, we can sit down and we can rationalize and we can hash out some kind of an agreement. Why is it that the people who are in our halls of Congress can't seem to do that? And I'll tell you why. Because the extreme right wing in this country keeps marching farther and farther and farther towards the edge. And the Democrats just don't seem to be able to make a stand. I'm not quite sure why.
Well,
but, you know, we've got to give them that courage. Or they've got to stand up and say, look, we'll smack you in the mouth over what we believe.
Some of these Tea Parties, I mean, they would like you to believe that this is just a reaction. A reaction of the working class, a reaction of the American people to what's happening in the country. I mean, the truth is, some of these Tea Party groups are pretty well funded. And if you dig a little further under the sand, you'll find that some of the people giving them money have been giving money to far-right groups for decades. And then now it's come in vogue, and a lot of these people have a lot of money. And that's why I think the Tea Party has really, the noise level that they've elevated themselves to is very much disproportionate to their numbers.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they're well-financed.
Well, they're well-financed, but also, look, there are people who are taking to the streets. And the squeaky wheel always gets the grease, and that's what we're seeing. Look, November will show. Christine O'Donnell won tonight in Delaware. And the Tea Party is saying, well, you know, we are going to take credit for that. Yeah, because you got the small number of people out to win a small election. So the question is, Democrats, what are you going to do come November? Are you going to be demoralized as the mainstream corporate-controlled media is telling you that you are? Because I've been to some Democratic Party meetings, and I've talked to a number of friends who are Democrats, and look, they're not demoralized. They're ready to get out and vote. They're ready to get out and do the organizing that needs to be done. And I say, great, that's part of the process. But, from a talk show host point of view, this is going to be a lot of fun. I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch the Republican Party implode, because they're never going to embrace the insanity that's coming in. And if they do, look out. That's when the real fun's going to begin.
No, you see more and more articles on national wire services about candidates in California, candidates in Nevada who really want their support, but they kind of are keeping them at arm's length. You know, they want their support, but they don't want to appear at least publicly in bed with them. They are a little leery. They like their numbers. They like the votes that they bring to the table, but many of them are a little hesitant, at least publicly, to embrace them. In other words, they'll use them as a vehicle to get elected. But they know that there's a lot of negative connotations with these people, and they keep them at arm's length.
Yeah,
that'll be interesting to watch.
But what I think is going to be funny, because they're going to win a number of seats. There's a chance that you could have four really insane people in the U.S. Senate. And, you know, look, four Michelle Bachmans in the U.S. Senate? Boy, that is going to be fun to watch. Just for, I mean, if you don't give a damn about this country, it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be totally destructive. We're going to have nothing get done. There's going to be total gridlock. Nobody's going to be able to agree. And what's going to happen is you're going to have more people distrust government, more people think that government can't accomplish anything, which is exactly what the moneyed interests want. They love this kind of dissension. They love it.
Yeah. Bill Clinton said it best. He said, look, when you're talking to your friends about the upcoming election, you know, remind them that for 8 years we were digging a hole. We were going further and further and further into a hole. He said, the first thing you need to do is stop digging. Along came Obama and the Democrats, and we stopped digging. But if we give the power back to the Republicans, they're going to have one hand on the Bible and the other hand on that proverbial
shovel. Yep.
He's exactly right. We're going to go back
to start digging, baby.
Going to start digging that hole again.
Drill, baby, drill.
And even if 2012, the American people give the keys to the car to the Republicans and they realize their mistake, guess what? That hole's going to be so much bigger.
Drill, baby, drill.
2012.
We're going to take a quick break. 717-231-2870. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. We're
United we bargain, divided we live. Rick Smith.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Tonight, that you could always speak your mind. You work so hard to say what's right. I watch you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
Seven one seven two three one two eight seven zero. That's the number. You got something on your mind? Question? Comment? You want to argue with me? I'm right here.
And you're in the mood.
Look, that's part of what's great about the political process. Part of what is great about politics is that you can have disagreements, and you can argue your position, and you can be passionate, and you can believe. But at the end of it, you've got to be rational and reasonable. That there, you know, I love this right-wing frame. It's my right. I've got the right. It's my right. Mine. My right. Free speech. Free speech. Yeah, you've got the right to do whatever you want until your right infringes upon mine. And then we've got problems. And that's what's going on in this country. Too many people think they have the right to do things that they don't have the right to do because it infringes on someone else. And what I find interesting is the level, the absolute high level of misinformation. And I love this. The people over at the public policy polling website. It's publicpolicypolling.blogspot.com. They were talking about Acorn. And this is their release. They say Acorn may not exist anymore, but 20% of Americans think, or at least say they think, it will steal the election for Democrats in control of Congress this fall. 20% think that this defunct group is going to rise out of the ashes and somehow, who knows. The release goes on to say that does represent a decrease from last fall in Acorn's perceived ability to steal an election. In November, we found 26% of the people thought the organization had stolen the 2008 presidential contest for Barack Obama. You know, because those Acorn people, that's what they do. They go on to say what's interesting is that there's been a significant reduction in concern in Republican ranks about Acorn's influence. While 52% of Republicans say they thought it had been responsible for Obama's victory, just 23% of them think it will bail out the Democrats this fall. That's 20% of Republicans who think Acorn will be influential this time, which is barely higher than the 20% of Democrats who say that they think Acorn will help them keep the party in charge. Perhaps, going back to this, perhaps Democratic voters have come to the conclusion that Acorn is their last best hope, or may more likely they gave a silly answer to a silly question, and we're not going to apologize for asking a silly question.
No.
Perhaps the most interesting thing about all of this is that only 40% of the voters definitely say they think Acorn will not steal the election, with another 40% saying that they're not sure. I guess a lot of folks are just waiting to see if Acorn's really gone away or it's hiding in the bushes. It's waiting. It's in the bushes. It's hiding for people to get complacent before they make their move. The boogeyman's coming. He's coming. He's coming. He's going to get you. Which is pretty much what the Republicans always say anyway. So what do you think? Is Acorn lurking in the weeds? Is the giant squirrel around the corner getting ready to steal your nuts? I don't know. Acorn's gone. And they were taken down for a reason, folks. They were organizing poor people. And the wealthy in this country cannot have the lower class organized. It's that simple. You know, I go back to the old Jay Gould quote, the railroad magnate who said, look, I can easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. And this Acorn thing, that's what it was. This was the investor class killing the other half. This was taking down any ability of poor people to unite and stand up, because that's what Acorn was doing. Oh, there was voter fraud, they said. Ho, voter fraud. Yeah, there was. The fraud was actually against Acorn. But that never got reported in the corporate control mainstream for-profit media, was it? No. The fraud, and let me explain it to you for those who've oh, my God, this is shocking news. Oh, it's shocking. What? Acorn was defrauded? Let me explain it to you. Acorn hired people to go out. Said, you know, we're going to hire you. We want you to take these forms out. Go get voter registrations. You bring them back, and we'll pay you at the end of the day, right? So the people went out, and they opened up a phone book, and they wrote down names. The people, a handful of people wrote Mickey Mouse down, Taj Mahal, George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush. You know, he probably doesn't vote. Wrote down all these names and turned them in. Acorn did due diligence. They cross-referenced the names, found out that a lot of them were fraudulent. Contacted local authorities. Said, we have some of these that are fraudulent. We want you to investigate them. They turned these people in. Well, the mainstream media, all they picked up on was there was bad voting, bad registrations, and Acorn did it. And the mainstream for-profit media said, oh, well, Acorn must have wanted it that way. Not that they got cheated out of wages, because they paid these people. And that's what you need to understand. Ask for the whole story. Don't believe what I have to say. In fact, you know, if you don't believe what I say, pick up the phone, give me a call. 717-231. We lost the number again. 231-2870. 717-231-2870. We will have an 800 number tomorrow if it kills me. And you have no idea how close it's almost doing. For anybody who knows, I mean, we've had an interesting week. But again, the number is 717-231-2870. But look, you know, when I think about this Acorn deal, what's frustrating to me is that most people have never heard that story, Jake. Most people have never heard the truth.
I know. I have some people that are friends, and you're exactly right. They blame Acorn and how they're corrupt and how they tried to steal the election. It is amazing. And I guess the old axiom, you know, the Nazi propaganda, Mr. Goebbels, said, you know, if you repeat a lie enough times, people will believe it. And that's basically what has happened with this organization. You know, what happened was really very, very small. It's been blown into the boogeyman. You're exactly right.
Well, I mean,
what's their crime? Oh, they did seditious things like registering people.
And getting poor people to vote. Yeah, it's always amazed me. I got to be honest. There are more. I go back to something my high school government teacher always said. And I'll remember this probably to the day I die, which is, I think, probably why I'm more to the left than to the right politically. He said, look, at the end of the day, Republicans are always going to be for the wealthy and big business. That's just how it's going to be. And the Democrats are always going to be for the poor masses and big social programs and government. And that's just how it's going to be. And he said, you know, eventually they're going to switch names because that's what they've done in the past. And you're always going to have one party who's pandering to the rich and one party that's pandering to the poor. And the important part here is what he said after that. He said, look, those of you who are in the middle, you have to decide which you're closer to. Are you closer to being rich or closer to being poor? Because you're going to end up paying for both. So which policies do you want to see enacted? Do you want to have strong unemployment? Do you want to have strong workmen's compensation laws? Do you want to have strong labor laws? Do you want to have strong Social Security safety net programs? Or do you want an unfettered system of hooray for me and the heck with everybody else? That's the difference. There are two very different schools of thought. And the question is, where are you? I know myself, I'm closer to being poor than I am to being able to reach into my pocket and pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for medical care like some other people, some fortunate people in this country. The vast majority of us are incapable of reaching into our pocket and pulling out $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $100,000 to save our child's life or to save our own life. So the question is, do we want socialist programs like insurance? Because, you know, I don't think you understand. The first time two people come together and say we're going to protect ourselves, that's socialism. So the first insurance pool, Jake, the first time we said, well, okay, we're going to all pull our money, and if someone gets hurt or someone loses their job with unemployment or you know, someone gets sick, we're going to pull their money and make sure that everyone's covered. That's socialism. So stop with the ridiculous titles. Let's talk about how we get people covered. Let's talk about how we move forward as a country. Let's talk about how we compete in the global economy. Let's talk about important stuff. Let's stop throwing names around. I have a guy called me a socialist, communist, fascist. And I said, if you understood what you said, you would understand how afraid of you I am. Because you're ignorant. You're dangerous. Socialism, fascism, communism, they all end in ISM. Yeah, they're all the same. And that's why we need to have these conversations. Look, you may not always agree with me, and I may not agree with you, but the conversation needs to be had. And that's why we do this program every night, and that's why from now until election time, we are going to be right here every night at 9 o'clock. Some nights, Mondays and Fridays, we're going to follow the football games, but we will be here every single night for your participation and for your comments. Again, rick@thericksmithshow.com is my email address. I do answer all emails personally. Also, thericksmithshow.com, if you missed any part of the program, we will have links to our podcasts. And when the video is up and running, we will do that as well. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this with your calls. Stick around.
Let us get sick. Don't let us get old. Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
On July 5th, 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law. It is also known as the Wagner Act after its chief sponsor, New York Senator Robert Wagner. Prior to its passage, Senator Wagner chaired the National Labor Board, created by Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 to attempt to bring order to labor-management relations. The National Labor Board consisted of three representatives from labor and three from industry, with Wagner as the chairman. It was here that Senator Wagner realized government assistance was required to level the playing field if labor unions were to effectively bargain with management. President Roosevelt said of the National Labor Relations Act, "It should serve as an important step toward the achievement of just and peaceful labor relations in industry." Hailed as the Magna Carta of labor, once the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law, workers were encouraged and protected to exercise their newly recognized rights to freedom of association, self-organization, and engage in concerted activities for the purpose of collectively bargaining through a representative of their own choosing in order to establish wages, hours, and conditions. Employer interference, such as threats and intimidation, firing, refusing to negotiate with the union, and discrimination for union activity were expressly prohibited. These illegal activities are described as unfair labor practices by the law. The impact of the Wagner Act on American life was substantial. The standard of living for American workers, their families, and communities was extraordinary. Unionization rates increased to a high of 35% of the American workforce as American workers demanded their rights. Working men and women finally had a unified voice to stand up and fight for dignity, respect, and safety in their workplace. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Month was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.thericksmithshow.com.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
I got to tell you, I really, honestly and truthfully, I can't get over the fact that the glass monument in Toledo, Ohio, this monument to the productive wonders of this nation is made with Chinese glass. I hear that song and I hear, "Hello, Pittsburgh Steel," and "Detroit Auto," and you know, I think Cleveland Steel, and I think Milwaukee, you know, productivity, and I think of all these cities throughout this country, the city of Trenton, for instance, with the bridge that says America, Trenton makes, the world takes. Maybe we should pack that bridge up and send it over to China and rewrite it. China makes, the U.S. takes. Now, it comes back down to insanity sometimes. You know, you look at our trade laws. We're the only country in the world that practices this bizarre idea of free trade. We have given away our productive ability. We've honestly given it away. For what? For a few cheap trinkets? You know, a basket full of cheap plastic stuff? You know, Pyrex, which used to be an American symbol. Now made in China. Plates that explode when you take them out of the oven. Is that a good thing? Yeah, you think about melamine in dog food, and you think about antifreeze in toothpaste. And you think about all the stuff that comes out of China that we would never allow in this country. Yet we only inspect about 1%, if that, of the cargo that comes into this country. We inspect virtually nothing. And we talk about securing our borders? Or is that just hatred of the people down there? Those people. You know, you look at NAFTA. And again, one of the things I had hoped for this president, and we've talked about this in the past, Jake, is that we would have taken a look at NAFTA. And for all you truckers on the road tonight, stop and think about what NAFTA is going to have to do. At some point, this president or the next president is going to have to open the Mexican border. And I asked my fellow truck drivers, you want to drive into Mexico? You want to take your rig down there? You want to put yourself in a position where you're at the mercy of their legal system? You want to put yourself at the mercy of the little bite as the federales pull you over and just take that little bite? Of course you don't. And we don't want unsafe Mexican trucks here. We don't want a dollar a day drivers in this country. We don't want to import exported jobs. I mean, stop and think about it. This is what we're talking about under NAFTA. And to Clinton's credit, you know, very, very small credit, he kept the border closed. And to the Democrats' credit, when Bush wanted to open the border, they fought it back. And to this president's credit, he's taken the political heat, keeping it closed. Now, Mexico's not stupid. They went after agriculture. They went after our grapes and our wines and corn and all of the things that we flood their markets with. And they put massive tariffs on it because they want to increase the pressure on our president to open those borders. So I'm curious, my truck driving friends, 717-231-2870, do we open the Mexican border? Would you be happy going into Mexico? Because I'll tell you, if the Republicans take power again, it's going to happen because it's part of their world vision. It's part of their world view, Jake. It's who they are. This is part of it. They believe we need to have labor competing all over the world. So if we can get the American workers to compete against the Mexican workers, we can drive down those wages. If we can get the Mexican workers to compete against the Chinese, we can drive down those wages. If we can get Americans to compete against the Chinese, the Indians, we can drive down those wages. And you know what that means? That means more profits. But here's the problem with that scenario, Jake. The problem is every nation in the world is set up on an export model. They're going to produce things and they're going to export it. And where do they export it?
The United States.
Right here. And the problem is we can no longer be consumer of last resort. Can't do it. Just can't do it anymore. So what do we need to do? We need to start producing things again. We need to pay reasonable wages. You know, I look at this MOTS strike that went on, and I don't know how many people heard about the MOTS strike. But this was a company, Dr. Pepper Snapple, who owns MOTS, a multi-state multinational corporation who's decided, and understand, they have record profits right now. They went to their workers and said, look, the average forklift driver in our area makes, let's say, $14 an hour. You guys make more than that, so we're going to drop you down. We're going to take a buck and a half. We're going to cut your pension. We're going to cut your health care. We're going to cut to make you down to them. Granted, yeah, you fought for all of these wage increases, and you fought for all of these benefits over the years. You fought for a bigger slice of the profit pie that you create. But here's an opportunity for us, the corporation, to cut you off at the knees because there are so many desperate people around here who would take your job in a heartbeat. So Mott's did the right thing. The Mott's workers did the right thing. They said, you know what? We're not going to take it. We're going out on strike. So they went out on strike, and in what I'm saying is unprecedented, Mott's went to their competitor and had their competitor make their product. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here. We are in a free enterprise system. We're told that we're a competitive system, free enterprise, capitalism, yes. Wouldn't this be a perfect opportunity, Jake, for the competitor to grab some market share?
Absolutely. But then again, do you really know the total agreement? There might have been a reciprocal agreement with the other company in the future. But that's just conjecture on my part, if you understand what I'm saying.
No, explain it to me.
Well, what I'm saying is if you have an agreement with one company and you're saying to that company, look, help us out during this strike, that other company might say to Mott's, well, maybe the next time we're on strike, maybe you can help us.
So you're talking about collusion.
That is, but that's not easy to prove. Remember, we have weak antitrust laws.
You wash my back, I'll wash yours.
No, it's absolutely collusion.
When
was the last time our antitrust laws really came down hard on big business? There was a time when they were strong.
I'm thinking the good socialist Republican there, the Teddy Roosevelt, the progressive Teddy Roosevelt.
And maybe even during the Eisenhower administration. But they've been, especially since the advent of Ronald Reagan, they've been considerably weakened.
Yeah, and the last time I remember any antitrust was Ma Bell, was Carter during the breakup of the phone company. That's the last time I remember any antitrust. And you look at the size of these companies, massive, behemoths. There's no competition going on.
The only
competition that's going on, Jake, is how fast you and I can slit each other's throats for a couple of pennies.
I mean, what the average person, since you're getting into antitrust, and we talked about health care, the average person has no idea that, that one of the big problems in health care is lack of competition. Monopoly. That was supposed to be a violation of our antitrust laws. Where are they at? If we would have strong antitrust laws, we would have more competition in the healthcare industry, which would mean, in theory.
I got to be honest. There's part of me that goes, I like competition. I don't know that competition in healthcare is the answer. I don't have the local three hospitals on my speed dial, so when I hit the ground with a heart attack, I'm calling for the best deal. I think, no, I'm not saying that you're wrong. What I'm saying is that, look, healthcare is one of those special items that you need it when you need it. And we as a society should be paying for it like we used to. We had community hospitals that were owned by who? Us.
I mean, let's be honest, the Blues. In many states, in the whole state, there's only two of them.
You're right.
And it's not necessarily the Blues, whoever the main healthcare provider is in that state.
Yep.
Whoever it is, I mean, let's be honest. That was one of why do you think the Democrats were pushing the public option? It would have provided a true competition.
I guess 717-231-2870. And we did talk about the public option, and again, I was in favor of it if we couldn't get a single payer system, which eventually down the road I think we absolutely need. We need a system where we pool everybody, right? I mean, how can you, as a society, what we've done to the insurance companies is we've taken the riskiest people out of the insurance pool. We as a society have said, the elderly and children, take them out of the pool. The people who use the most healthcare, because every study that I've read says you use healthcare the first 5 years and the last. That's when the biggest use of healthcare is, because you're being born. And when my kids were born, it was like $8,000. It wasn't cheap. We're going to take a quick break right here. When we come back, we're going to pick up some of this tax stuff. You're going to be just blown away by the fact that there are Blue Dog Democrats who want to extend the Bush tax cut. We're right back after this.
My microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat, it is my business hat. I'm up to 1 a.m. I must tell you that I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
On Wednesday, workers and activists coast to coast will turn out for the Jobs with Justice Jobs Emergency Day of Action. Sarita Gupta is Executive Director of Jobs with Justice.
What we're trying to do on that day is to send a very clear message that our communities are facing serious jobs crisis, and we really need Congress now to step up and take some bold action to address the jobs crisis.
At least 15 million Americans are jobless, with millions more underemployed. The private sector is failing to create the jobs needed to put us back to work. Gupta says the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act worked to save jobs, but it wasn't enough to get us out of the huge economic hole we're in. She says there will be actions in 60 U.S. cities Wednesday demanding government action to create jobs, and she says it will help build the National Progressive One Nation March, October 2nd in Washington, D.C., expected to draw masses of people from across America to demand the change that America voted for in 2008.
Unions, civil rights organizations, community groups, faith-based organizations, immigrant rights organizations, just numbers of different groups coming together to send a very clear message that we're one nation, you know, marching together for our values and principles. And the actions this week will help set up and get people motivated and mobilized for the October 2nd mobilization.
As low-wage workers continue to struggle in today's economy, a new book exposes a small group of managers that are playing the role of modern-day Robin Hoods. Jesse Russell reports.
While researching a book about the difficulties of low-income workers, Brandeis University sociologist Lisa Dodson stumbled into the world that exists between low-income and middle-class workers. Dodson found managers who were concerned about the wages being paid to workers they oversaw, but felt there was little they could do. Among this group, she found a number of modern-day Robin Hoods.
It was a smaller group, but they not only thought it was unfair, they also, when they could, they would do something about it. They would engage in what I call acts of economic disobedience.
Dodson said the most common reason for these managers opening their eyes to the plight of lower-wage workers had to do with children.
These were people who had close proximity with working class people. They have close every day. They work alongside them. And they took the moment to kind of look them in the face and say, how would I feel if I were working that hard and I couldn't take care of my kids?
The results of her investigations can be found in her new book, The Moral Underground: How Ordinary Americans Subvert an Unfair Economy.
Teamster drivers who deliver Philadelphia's two daily newspapers rejected a contract offer that replaces their defined pensions with 401ks. The newspapers are being bought out in a bankruptcy. The new owners want to renege on the pensions promise. This newscast made possible in part by the National Education Association.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of the armies of salvation, wasting time in the unborn lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution.
You know, we keep hearing that. We keep hearing the people on the tea bag side of things. The Tea Party are saying, look, we're gonna rise up, we're gonna take the country back. You know, I hear a story like at the end of the wind clip there, that the company's taken away the Teamsters' defined pension plan. These workers taking away their defined plan and saddling them with 401ks. And I got to ask, you know, when are people in this country going to rise up and say, you know, those crappy 401ks that you shoved down our throats, They're not working out. And yet we've got politicians who are talking about doing the exact same thing to Social Security. Saying, oh, yeah, you know, those 401ks, they worked out so well. Let's do it to our Social Security safety net. Let's put everybody at the mercy of Wall Street. Because I don't know if you've noticed, folks, the Wall Street bonuses are back. The big paydays on Wall Street, they're back. Yet on Main Street, the wages are being slashed. And you know, to go back to this Mott's deal, where these workers out on strike to defend what they had won over the years and stand up against this extremely profitable behemoth, you got to give them credit. And some of the numbers that it's shocking what the corporate thieves are stealing from working people.
Well, the truth is, if you want actual numbers, $550 million profit last year.
$550 million.
Well, a little better than half a million. At the same time, they wanted $1.50 per hour wage cut for all workers, a pension freeze for present employers, and elimination of pension for future employees. Totally, no pension. No pension for future employees. Decreased employer contribution. Talked about the 401k. They want to decrease their contribution and increase their cost to their employers for health care. That's an awful, awful lot. That's an awful lot even in bad economic times, but it's unconscionable when you're profitable and making a nice, handsome profit.
So the workers went back to work. The strike is now over. And what you've got is a wage freeze. Fortunately, they stood the line and they said, no, we're not taking a buck and a half pay cut. But there's a freeze on wages. Now, this company made over $500 million. They're going to pay 20% of their health care costs plus anything above and beyond what has been allotted. New hires will get only a 401k. Current employees will see their defined plans frozen with a very small, almost a non-existent increase. And you look at this stuff and you say, how much more is the working class of this country going to take? And as I've said a number of times, it's going to take a little bit more because we in the working class still have some things. And it's only going to be when we have nothing left that you're going to see people rising up and fighting in the right direction. The Tea Party people, and I give them, on one vein, I give them credit for organizing, for doing the hard work of organizing. I think they're wrong-headed. I think they're taking us down the wrong path. I think they're going to make things worse. But it's something. It's movement. And, you know, Jake, I look at, there was a gas line that exploded in just outside of San Francisco recently. And a couple people were killed because of this gas explosion. To me, this highlights the fact that we need to invest in our infrastructure. This is a way to put people back to work. Remember the bridge in Minnesota that collapsed? I-35 fell into the Mississippi River. The steam pipe in New York that exploded. Just a few of our infrastructural failures that we've seen across this nation. You want to get people back to work, you build stuff. Fix what's aging. And I guarantee you, once we get people back to work and we get this economy moving again, the Tea Party people will say, you know what? I'm going back to work. I go back to the time I went to one of the rallies. And I was talking to a guy who was standing there with a sign saying, smaller government, less spending! Smaller government, less spending! And I said, you know, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. What are you doing here? Well, I got laid off over 6 months ago. Me and my five buddies here, we've all been laid off over 6 months. And I said, you know, the quickest way to cut government spending is to cut your unemployment. And no matter how many times I tell that story, I get a chuckle out of it because it shows just how misguided some of these folks really are. And I go back to the guy that I met when I first moved to this area. Bought his house with a GI Bill. retired with a Teamsters pension, Social Security, Medicare. His wife on disability through Social Security because of a repetitive use injury, which we don't even identify anymore, thanks to George W. Bush. And yet, he was promoting people who want to destroy those things, Jake. What is it about us in the working class that does this? Is it our hatred of others? Is it our wanton disregard for people behind us? I don't know what the answer to that is. But we've got to somehow change that.
Part of the problem is exactly why we're here, Rick. A complete domination of one political message
and that's
by the corporate media.
And that's across the spectrum. I mean, if you looked at that healthcare discussion, there were as many Democrats on the corporate side as there were Republicans. Yes. And it comes down to money. It comes down to the big donors, you know, saying, look, we want ours. You know, that deal with Nelson splitting out his little special part of the pie. That's what angers people, and it angers me too. You know, we have common ground on this. We have common ground. And it comes down to the money, man. It's the money. And what we're seeing is so much money right now going to the Republicans. New York Times article today. GOP allies drive ad spending disparity. Michael Liu writes, outside groups supporting Republican candidates in House and Senate races across the country have been swamping their Democratic-leaning counterparts on television since early August as the midterm election season has begun heating up. The disparity in ad wars has been an array of Republican-oriented organizations that are set up so they can accept donations of unlimited size from individuals and corporations without having to disclose them. The situation raises the possibility that a relatively small cadre of deep-pocketed donors, unknown to the general public, is shaping the battle for Congress in the early going. Look, the reality is big money has always controlled this nation. Rush Limbaugh is not the $50 million a year mouthpiece for the working people. He is a $50 million man for corporate America. And you look at all this money, and this Citizens United case has thrown this country upside down. When people like the Koch brothers can give $1 billion to someone like FreedomWorks or Karl Rove's group, there's a serious, serious problem. And it's the money. And until we get the money out of here, until we get the money out of this, you and I are going to be inundated and over misinformed. And the only thing that we have to fight back is the ability for one person to talk to another, Jake.
And you can thank Mr. Roberts, Mr. Alito, the two people who testified before Congress that they would not be activist judges.
Oh, I love that.
And they've proven the exact opposite.
Gotta call balls and strikes. Stare decisis. I'm going to call it as I see it. Balls and strikes. I believe in decided law. Stare decisis. Mr. Roberts. I'm not going to be an activist judge. And what do you call that? 100 years of law he just threw out the window. Why? Because he's a corporatist. I mean, it's just... The amount of money that's gone into this system is just amazing. And we see other stories this week from the New York Times. K Street is hiring Republican lobbyists, anywhere from $300,000 to $1 million apiece. You don't think there's a problem in Washington? I do. The swinging door, people like Tom Ridge running from being the head of the Homeland Security over to being a private contractor, working for the natural gas industry. You don't think that's a problem? You know, I'm mad as hell, too. I'm right with the teabaggers. I'm furious. But the answer is not no government. The answer is not drag the government into the bathtub and drown it. That's not the answer. The answer is not less regulation. The answer is not handing more money to rich people. It's not the answer. And you look at this tax, this debate over the Bush tax code, over the Bush tax handouts. I actually watched some YouTube clips of Tea Party people walking down the street who, part of me said they probably don't have a pot to...
You know what?
In. And they're standing there defending that the top 2% get a massive tax break. The people who don't need it. And I'm looking at these people, I'm going, you know, am I missing something here? Am I missing something? Yeah, they talk about the fabulous 50s, how wonderful it was. And when we come back, let's take a walk back to the fabulous 50s. Let's talk about the tax code of the fabulous 50s. We're right back after this. Stick around. 717-231-2870. We're right back.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachman, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
On July 5th, 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law. It is also known as the Wagner Act after its chief sponsor, New York Senator Robert Wagner. Prior to its passage, Senator Wagner chaired the National Labor Board, created by Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 to attempt to bring order to labor-management relations. The National Labor Board consisted of three representatives from labor and three from industry, with Wagner as the chairman. It was here that Senator Wagner realized government assistance was required to level the playing field if labor unions were to effectively bargain with management. President Roosevelt said of the National Labor Relations Act, "It should serve as an important step toward the achievement of just and peaceful labor relations in industry." Hailed as the Magna Carta of labor, once the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law, workers were encouraged and protected to exercise their newly recognized rights to freedom of association, self-organization, and engage in concerted activities for the purpose of collectively bargaining through a representative of their own choosing in order to establish wages, hours, and conditions. Employer interference, such as threats and intimidation, firing, refusing to negotiate with the union, and discrimination for union activity were expressly prohibited. These illegal activities are described as unfair labor practices by the law. The impact of the Wagner Act on American life was substantial. The standard of living for American workers, their families, and communities was extraordinary. Unionization rates increased to a high of 35% of the American workforce as American workers demanded their rights. Working men and women finally had a unified voice to stand up and fight for dignity, respect, and safety in their workplace. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Chambers of Commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now.
Well, I gotta tell you, it better start now. We better start doing something, folks. You look at this story from the Washington Post. Republicans pledge to fight to preserve the Bush-era tax cuts. Congressional Republicans said Monday that they will resist President Obama's plan to allow Bush-era tax cuts for the nation's wealthiest households to expire. They vowed to fight to preserve the cuts for all Americans. Representative Phil Gingrey, Republican from Georgia, called for a, quote, pledge of your sworn sacred honor and a covenant in blood from lawmakers not to let the coveted Bush tax cuts for their wealthy campaign donors expire. Am I the only one who thinks these people are nuts? I mean, honestly, am I the only one who goes, we're in the worst economic environment in 70 years? This is what, and I'm saying this is the second Republican Great Depression. If it's not for unemployment, if it's not for food stamps, if it's not for the elasticity in our safety net programs that keep people from collapsing and smashing to death on the ground, we are smack dab in a situation as bad or not worse than the Great Crash.
Very close. Very close.
The president's argued for extending the Bush tax cuts, again, for you people in the cheap seats, for the folks who, Mr. that president, he's going to raise taxes on everybody. For you in the cheap seats, let me say this very clearly. The only thing Obama has argued cutting from the Bush tax cuts, the only thing that he's going to let expire are the massive tax cuts for the people making over $250,000 a year, which is about 2% of the population. Now, I look at these people marching along in the teabag rallies with their signs, no pubic option, or the red circle with no amen, Steve thing, or whatever. I'm not sure what that means, but I'm sure it was misspelled. 2% of the population. And I know the 2% that make $250,000 a year, Jake, were not marching in those parades, and I can guarantee you the guy getting whipped by the masked man who was supposed to be President Obama, the guy who was getting whipped in the parade, I can guarantee he didn't make $250,000 a year.
I'm absolutely certain you're right.
So what's the hang-up? Well, the hang-up is we seem to have this love affair with the possibility that maybe, possibly someday, we're going to be rich. And for 99.999% of the people, they do not. In fact, more studies have shown that people are actually falling backward than moving ahead. This economic collapse, this Bush recession, I'm calling it a depression, is the result of 30 years of supply-side voodoo Reaganomics. And it went from Reagan to H.W. Bush to Bill Clinton to the little shrub man himself and to an extent to this president. We have this bizarre love affair with the benevolent corporation that has never existed. Sorry, it doesn't exist. The corporate form was created for, well, originally it was created for two reasons. One, to serve the public good, and two, to make a profit. They quickly got rid of that whole public good thing with the charter busters, you know, the Standard Oil people, Rockefeller. Quickly got rid of that first line, what we're going to do to help society. Had to get rid of that in a hurry, I think, Jake.
And they had the power to do it.
Just like they've got the power now to go after workers and destroy their wages. And I look at this thing, man. They're talking about if we let this continue. And Mitch McConnell had pushed through a bill, which is going to cost us an extra $4 trillion by 2020. So I'm asking my T-Twizzler friends. I'm asking you, how are we going to pay for this stuff? How are we going to pay for these quote-unquote tax cuts? And I look at Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, a Republican, probably a name that's going to be thrown around in the 2012 presidential pool. In a Newsweek profile, he said he's willing to have a grown-up conversation about tax hikes. A grown-up conversation about tax hikes. And that increases should not be taken off the table. And what you've had in this country for decades now is you've had Republicans railing against deficits and debt, but they've been too afraid of voter backlash to go beyond that. And what's interesting to me is you're starting to get some sane people going, Jake, you know, how are we going to pay for all this? How are we going to rebuild our roads so businesses can get their product to the stores? How are we going to pay for our education so that workers can actually create and be innovative and do the jobs of the 21st century? And we do that by taxation. Look, I don't like paying taxes. I don't think anybody likes paying taxes.
It's the price of civilization at the end of the day, and here's where you're exactly right. I mean, the reality is. Reality is that there's going to be taxes. The question then becomes, who's going to pay? Not only who's going to pay, but at what percentage? Who's going to be favored? Who's not going to be favored? Who has, at the end of the day, it comes down to political power. And right now, those who have money invested in stock and those who are wealthy have the political power to have our tax system favor them.
And look, you've got these blue dog Democrats who are saying, well, you know, we can't raise taxes on the rich because they're the ones who spend all the money. Which is ridiculous. Which, you know, just on a conceptual level, one person can only consume so much. Then they start to save stuff. What we need right now is we need a bunch of people with a couple of bucks in their pocket to go out and start buying some stuff to put people back to work. We need to invest in things. I look at where my daughter goes to school. They invested in solar panels. And it is a fantastic project. You put a bunch of people to work, you built the solar panels, you put them out there, and those solar panels will be at that school for the next 20, 30 years, paying the investment back every year. Because now the school's off the grid. The school is completely off the grid. And what they're doing, all the excess energy that they create through conservation, they are selling back to the grid to pay back the money that they spent. This is what we should be doing. Every government building in this country should be putting solar panels up, in my opinion. And that's what I talk about the small business bill, Jake. If we said, hey, build us some solar panels. Here's the money. We're not giving you a tax break. You build what we want. That's the price you build them at. Here's the money. Get to it.
Good idea. Politically. At this point in history, politically, that'll be tough to get.
But isn't that what we did, you know, after the Great Depression? Isn't that what Roosevelt
did? Absolutely.
Put people back to work? I mean, I think of my great-grandfather, who his job was to go down the street and put the bricks in the ground. And they paved the road with bricks by hand. And when they got to the end of the street, you know what they did? They turned around and turned the bricks over. Why? Because you need to get people back to work. You need people to have that therapeutic reward of work.
You're kind of intimating in some of that was make work. There's so much work to be done in this country. We wouldn't have to come up with 1 hour of make work. There's so much that can be done. And to be fair to this Civilian Conservation Corps, to this day, there's things that they made that are still here.
And I'm not arguing that. I'm telling you what my great-grandfather's job was. You know, that's what helped them through the Great Depression. That's what helped them put food on the table and gave the family dignity and gave the man of the family the dignity that he was able to supply a living for his family. What's going on right now, I think, Jake, is that a lot of people are looking out and saying, hey, man, I've been able to make it all these years. I've supported my family. My identity is tied up in the ability that I can feed my kids and put a roof over their head. And right now, I can't do it. I think that's why people are angry.
Absolutely. You know, there is, and we talked about this before, but I think since we have a new group of listeners, I think it bears repeating. You know, that there is some similarity between what's happening now and during the Great Depression, where FDR was swept into office with this huge, absolute, overwhelming mandate. And he came in from 32 to 34, 36, he made progress. In 36, the American people decided that, well, maybe we've gone too far. And the same interests that represented back then the wealthy and the corporate interest were telling the American people, you know, we need to back off. This guy's maybe a little bit too socialist, and maybe we need to go back to the quote American way unquote.
The good old days.
And the American people voted them in. And what happened? Instead of the unemployment rate decreasing from 36 to 38 because of cutbacks, it increased. 38, the American people got smart, kicked them out. From 38 to 42, and then the unemployment rate and the economy kept improving. Eventually, World War II ended the Great Depression. And so it is now. We've made some progress. Not nearly enough in a whole wide range of areas. I think, truthfully, I think President Obama's going to need two terms to get us out of this mammoth hole that we're in. But let's not go backwards. Let's not go backwards. The answer isn't to go back to what we just experienced for 8 years.
The answer is not going back to what got us into this mess. Remember,
exactly right.
We didn't get into this overnight. We're not getting out of it. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and pick this up on the other side of the break. And I want to talk about this email I got during the break. We're right back after this.
Working man like me. I ain't never been on welfare. That's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Whether you want it to or not, technology marches on and on and on and on. For example, Kenmore, the home appliance maker, offers a select line of washers and dryers that talk. Not to us owners. No, we're too stupid. Rather, the machines talk directly to service agents back at Kenmore Central, wherever in the spinning cosmos that might be located. Just dial up a service repair number and a faraway corporate facilitator will listen to your machine, explain its problems, then make a diagnosis to get the appliance back in sync. Am I alone in being suspicious about this? How long before the machines do their own dialing, perhaps even calling other washer dryers in your area to form insurgent pods? Seriously, do you really know what capabilities the corporate powers have quietly tucked into your home appliances? You can try reading your owner's manual, but those things are too dense to decipher, unless you're a computer. For all you know, your laundry room, which appears so pedantic and one-dimensional, could be listening to you, secretly recording and reporting your daily patterns, thought processes, and comings and goings. And don't think for a moment that the washer-dryer combos are in this by themselves. Co-conspirators abound. Your self-starting coffee maker, your smart refrigerator, that iPod in your ear, and your do-it-all cell phone. Oh, my God, they're not called cell phones for nothing, are they? This is Jim Hightower saying, admit it. We the people really know nothing about the techno-gizmos that outnumber us and completely surround us. What if they choose to rise up en masse? They could bring our whole civilization down in a nanosecond. I'm surprised that the right-wing blogosphere hasn't already sounded the alarms about this as a liberal plot masterminded by Obama and his cadre of Islamic techno-communist fascists.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
Fire it up! Fire it up! Make sure you send me an email, rick@therickSmithShow.com. 717-231-2870 is our number here. I got this email during the break. It's one of these chain emails that I think we all get. My problem is I actually read them.
The headline was 1% transaction tax is proposed. Now, granted, this is back from July, so it's made its rounds, but I thought it was interesting. It says President Obama's finance team is recommending a transaction tax. His plan is to sneak it in after the November elections to keep it under the radar. This is a 1% tax on all transactions at any financial institution, banks, credit unions, extra. Any deposit you make or move around within your account, i.e. transfer to, will have a 1% tax charged to it. If you pay your check, if your paycheck or your Social Security or whatever is deposited, 1% transfer charge. If you hand carry a check in to be deposited, 1% transfer charge. If you take cash in to be deposited, 1% tax. This from the man who promised that if you make $250,000 or less, you will not see a penny of new tax. Keep your eyes and ears open. You will be amazed at what you learn. Well, first, interestingly enough, they're talking about the House Bill 4646, which was introduced by Philadelphia Democrat Chaka Fetah. Has no co-sponsors. It's dead in committee. There's nobody pushing this through. His idea was to do away with the income tax. He wanted to do completely away with all federal income taxes, so you can do away with the IRS, so that the banks would be where all of the taxes would be collected. Personally, I'm not so fond of the idea. But, you know, it is what it is. What's interesting to me, though, is that, you know, I get this email, and everybody's all up in arms, yet when you take out your credit card or your debit card, you're basically being taxed by the banks or the credit card companies from anywhere from 2 to 5% every time you swipe your card through. And I don't know that most people understand that. Every time you swipe your card, the credit card company, they charge a fee. And I think American Express is the top end, 5%. But most of them are around 2, 2.5, 3%. That's a tax in my estimation. Granted, it's going to a private for-profit company, but it's still a tax. You're still paying it. But nobody seems to get upset about that. But, you know, I love how these emails, Jake, get these people all lathered up. You know, they get their panties all in a wad, and man, it's email, and let's run into the streets. Granted, it doesn't have a snowball's chance of ever passing, and that's what it was meant to do. It riles people up.
And I got to say, for the most part, the ones I've met, now, I might be a little unfair, but those at the Tea Party rallies, they're masters at the one-liners, but when you talk to them about the issues, most of them pass that base level. They know very little.
Well, I mean, again, and one of the things that I like about doing this program is it gives me the opportunity to talk to people. And you have the ability then to go beyond that sloganeering, because we have become a slogan society. We have become a soundbite society. And by actually having the chance to sit down and talk to somebody and have a conversation, you have the ability to go beyond the knowledge level, which is one of the things that I've been distraught about our education system with. We seem to be happy with regurgitation of facts at the knowledge level, but we don't teach critical thinking skills. We don't teach people how to solve problems. And again, I think I said this earlier in the program. One of the things that's frightening to me is it seems that we are, as a nation, losing our ability to see the big picture and to visualize solutions.
I believe they call it cognitive thinking, Rick.
Well, Mr. Freud. No, I mean, really. I mean, well,
no, you're correct. I understand exactly what you're saying. And in the long term, big picture, that's disconcerting, to say the least.
I mean, unemployment, we should be able to figure out how to take care of this. We should be able to figure out how to get back to full employment.
You know, I guess maybe what you're starting to say is, you know, you, Do we really as a nation have the ability to deal with these very serious 21st century problems? We better, if we don't have the ability right now, we better evolve into a society that does, because ultimately they will have very, very adverse effects. And it won't be all that long. You know, we seem to think that because we were at the top of the pile all these years, that that's always going to be. No, we can in a relatively short time devolve into a second-rate world power.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing, and I like to believe that we have the ability to do great things. Because I think we do. I think we have the ability to do fantastic things. We just have to put our mind to it. Collectively, we have to come together and say, hey, you know what? We can do this. And there are solutions. And there are positive things in all of this.
When you got into Eisenhower several times, and you jokingly call him that great socialist president. We were probably the apex of power from 52 to 60, even into the Kennedy administration. And what was significant about that time, economically, we were at the top of the heap, but we also had a burgeoning, very strong working middle class. And our nation was strong from its core out, not just at the top, but from its core out. And we've gotten away from that. We've gotten away from that. And during that time, because we had a burgeoning, vibrant, middle class, we also became a stronger nation because that middle class knew enough. Demanded stuff, exactly.
We want an educational
system.
We want education.
A safety net.
Absolutely.
All those things that road system, which we developed to a tremendous degree in the 50s and 60s, which made us a stronger nation, stronger society, and we seem to be veering away from that into these side issues where people are looking at it, me, and we've lost the vision of the common good. And I know that, so the teabaggers, when you say common good, and you listen to the right-wing talk show host, it's like, it's a dirty word. But it's really not. What it means is we're all looking out for each other, and we're all looking out for each other as Americans. We've gone away from that concept.
I absolutely agree. I think what has to happen, though, is we have to start talking to each other. And we have to, you know, we have to care. We have to care. Because, man, you know, I sit and I think about some of the things sometimes that my kids are going to have to deal with. And when President Obama was talking today, to the school children at that school in Philadelphia, as you pointed out, as a father, saying, look, times are going to be tough. You're going to need a good education. Take advantage of this opportunity. Because the reality is you're facing a tough row ahead of you. And you get people who blast that, who can't even get behind a message of hard work and responsibility just because it's him. We got a problem.
I know.
And it's my hope that we have the ability to wake up at some point. By having this program add some balance, you may not agree with anything I say, but hopefully it'll make you think about what you believe. And you know what? You can call me and tell me, hey, Rick, you know what? I think you're wrong. And we can have that discussion.
You know, Rick, you talked about the kids. The truth is, our children on just one level, educational level, they're getting beat by children in other countries. When you look at all kinds of standards, they're basically not forcing, they're having their children go to school more. They have a better educational system, a more effective educational system. One place where we can start.
Absolutely. And when we talked about lengthening the school days a couple years ago, what the Republicans say? Oh, I don't want to pay for babysitting. That's the mentality on the right.
Or God forbid that we need more teachers, because the teachers' unions are the root of all evil, if you listen to some of these Tea Party people. I mean, that kind of mentality. When I was growing up, teachers were revered.
You know why? You know, I got a friend who's a retired teacher, and she says, you know, we were revered. People loved us when we couldn't bring our own apple to school. We had to rely on the kids bringing us an apple for our lunch. They loved us when we were poor. As soon as we started saying, hey, you know, we'd kind of like to make a living. We'd kind of like to pay our own bills and buy our own apples. That's when everyone said, well, we don't like you anymore.
Well, I think there's some protect. I think we have to put it in perspective. I mean, the perception is the good old days, and we tend to romanticize it, and we tend to think, well, you know, when I was growing up, all the teachers were good. Well, they weren't all good. They weren't all good, but
I got beaten by a lot of bad ones.
Well, okay. The truth is that you have good and bad, and yes, you have some teachers that perhaps aren't what they should be, but you still have teachers who can make a clear difference in a child's life. You still have that teacher that's gonna,
I can name several of them,
devote that extra time and be a mentor and have a clear mandate for the future of that child and work with them and try to make them the best possible student and person.
Yep, absolutely. We're gonna take a break. We're right back to wrap this up. Stick around. The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
And now, back to the Rick Smith Show.
How many people were out of tickets in college last night, on Monday night, for the big debate between Ryan Sanders, the Democrat, for the 19th Congressional District, and incumbent Republican Todd Platts. And, of course, there's an independent Joshua Monahan. I got to be honest. Monahan, I guess, pretty much stole the show by saying that he believed government had no business meddling in environmental issues. Let me ask you there, Mr. Monahan, exactly who should be doing that? Because obviously corporations are not doing it. Am I missing something here? This is an interesting race over in the 19th. This kid Sanders is running I think a really good campaign. He's a smart kid, well-spoken, an actual small businessman. Not one of those imaginary small business guys who never shows up to work. He just says, show me the money. An actual guy who goes to work and does what he's supposed to be doing there with his business. But, you know, Platts is an interesting character. He put his name in, I think it's for comptroller. It's a 15-year appointment. Yet he's running for his congressional seat. And, you know, I don't know why anyone would vote for a guy who doesn't want the job. Does that seem weird to you?
To a degree. But, you know, you and I both know he'll be tough to beat. I agree with you. I understand what you're saying. If he really doesn't want it, it's kind of like, I guess I'll have to stay in Congress because I can't get what I really want.
Yeah.
Where are the voters?
Excellent point.
Where are the voters?
Monahan, he is a Cumberland Valley High graduate who owns a landscaping business. Although he didn't elaborate on his response or others he gave, he was consistent in his message that less government equals better rule, although he couldn't explain how or why. That seems about right. That kind of, it's just better. I know it is. Better.
No, he's just mouthing the right wing talking points.
Better.
That he's heard.
It's better. Less filling. Better. Platts is seeking his sixth term. He emphasized success, according to the Sentinel. He emphasized successes in crossing party lines to find solutions to problems confronting the nation, and particularly central Pennsylvania. He touted his backing of the recent reauthorization of the Child Nutrition Act, something Republicans hate. So remember, Republicans, one of the things your hero, Ronald Reagan, was against, the school lunch programs. Screw those poor kids. Let them starve. Because remember, ketchup's a vegetable. And the thing is I remember those school lunches.
I do remember them.
As a kid. You know, I remember going to the Puritan school in Cleveland, and we would all line up to go into the cafeteria and get a little tin of, you know, who knows what it was, maybe pork and beans with a wiener in it, a grilled cheese sandwich, something nutritious, something hot. And for the majority of people in that line, Jake, that would be the only hot meal they would get that day. And the first thing Ronald Reagan did when he came into office was wipe that stuff out. And you think about all the wiping out he did, all of the programs that helped poor people, all of the programs that would have helped our economy and help us get off of foreign oil, wiping out all subsidies to solar panels, basically destroying a fledgling industry.
Well, if I can be the devil's advocate, the conservatives will tell you, well, you know, we're not here to feed them. What does that have to do with education? Well, it has a lot to do with education. If you have a child that's undernourished, if you have a child that hasn't eaten, maybe his attention isn't going to be there. His energy level. So
we're always going to need hand workers.
Okay.
Need somebody to pick up after me because I need my hotel room cleaned. And when I get old, I need someone to wipe my nose. And I don't want to pay them. Bread and water. I don't know how many people are planning on going overseas in the coming months, but I caution you about going to India. A story by CBS AP. They asked the question, will the U.S. be overrun by disease-causing superbugs that are resistant to just about every antibiotic? It's possible, say some scientists. Recently, three Americans were treated for serious urinary tract infections caused by bacteria carrying a gene that makes them highly resistant to antibiotics. Bacteria that carry the genes known as New Delhi metallobeta-lactamase. Good luck. Simply for us people who aren't that bright, NDM-1. I'm sure it'll have some cute name like, I'm not going to say.
And they pick that up in food or water?
Well, what happens is, you know, you can pick it up anyway, hand to mouth. Anyway, but evidently it's widespread throughout India. And these three Americans had spent a little time in India. Now, they're saying that these people, they survived, but they had to use the last known antibiotic that could take care of this. And I'm not going to even try and mispronounce the word. But these three lived, but they're saying, hold on, everyone else may not be so lucky. And I look at this and I go, another wonder of free trade. Another wonder of open borders. You know those bugs that are flying around here? I think they call them stink bugs. You ever see those things? Another thank you very much wonder of free trade. They did a study and found that they came in through the port of New York into Allentown. And they are going across the state because there are no natural predators in the U.S. for these things. They come from Asia. And we got them, man. Welcome to free trade. Welcome to globalization. And I look at these kind of bugs. You know, you look at swine flu. You look at, you know, all the bird flu. Again, this is what happens when we have people going all over, jet-setting around, and your body is not capable of resisting the local bacteria and the local stuff that other people can. This is troublesome to me. Absolutely troublesome. Anyway, thanks today for everybody on the program. Thanks for listening to our first program. I think this went really well. And in the coming days, we will have the 800 number up and running. You will be able to call here very simply by dialing our 1-800 number. We had some people, you know, try and call in. Our phone system is we're just having some real problems. But we will have those rectified tomorrow, I guarantee it, or there will be hell to be paid. I will have heads. Heads will roll, I'm saying. Pretty simple stuff, Jake. So what do you think? Our first night here on WIOO, WEEO, success?
I think so. I hope that we can develop a working relationship with a lot of people out there.
I'm really looking forward to this.
Conversation with the community, if you will.
I think this is going to be a great, great run-up to the election. I think we're going to have... we're going to be bringing you Congressman Sestak, and we're going to be bringing you all the candidates, and we're going to try and get the Republicans. I doubt that they're going to come on and talk to us. They haven't in the last 5 years, so I don't see any reason they will. But we will offer, because it's important to have these conversations. And you're going to have the opportunity to talk to the Democratic candidates. And I suggest you grill them. Find out what it is that they stand for. Find out their positions, because this is how we hold people accountable. This is part of the political process.
And who's going to become governor is going to have one tremendous job.
This is an important year.
Absolutely.
And I'm saying, anybody listening to this, you need to register to vote. You need to get out and vote. Because this is a major year. Because we're talking redistricting. And the next governor is going to be the guy who's pushing the redistricting. We could, conceivably, you can redistrict a whole bunch of people out of office real soon. Again, the website, thericksmithshow.com, we have archived many of our past shows for you to look at. We will be doing the video streaming if you want to see here inside of our studios. And we do answer all emails, rick@thericksmithshow.com. One thing before I leave, got to talk about some sports quick. It seems that Reggie Bush is going to be returning the Heisman Trophy. And there's part of me that says, I don't think he should have to. And it's the way that we look at college athletes, that scholar athletes, if you will, that they shouldn't be paid. I think they should be paid. And I think this is ridiculous.
Well, Rick, if you get into it, since you opened a can of worms.
Please do.
Some of the things he did, he prospered very, very well, him and his family. It was a clear violation of the NCAA now. Can the NCAA set up a better system? Yes. I think in some ways they are big hypocrites. I mean, it's to the point, I know Paterno, it's to the point where they can't even take their girlfriend out on a Saturday night. That's another conversation for another time.
That's a bit much. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. It's coming like